explorers, welcome to X Squared Radio, where the past meets the future. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. In here, the results are always positive. We explore the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. Whether you are driving across the country or listening on the web while you're working on your favorite project, you are about to learn more about who we are, why we are here, and what we may become if you thought possible. We might go a little past your imagination, but have no fear. You will be safely traveling with us. Keep your arms inside the vehicle, recline your chair, and look out the window as we launch X Squared Radio. Foundations of religion and science were used to restore knowledge lost for over 6,000 years in our first book. The Ark of Millions of Years, Volume 2, called 2012 and Harvest of the End Times, brings us vital knowledge for the race of mankind. Have the Watchers returned? What did the Aztecs mean by their ancient predictions for the year 2012? Why is Earth changing so rapidly now before our very eyes? Who were the Shining Ones who lived on the Earth and worked with mankind as they recovered from cataclysm? Who are we? Where did we come from? If you could find a book that answers just one of these questions, you'd buy it. Now there are two in this series that is sweeping the world with its message. Go to arcofmillionsofyears.com. Get your autographed copy today. Now, also available in full audio version. This is Brooks Agnew with X Squared Radio with a message for our friends in the radio broadcast world. If you have noticed that your listeners aren't around anymore, it's because they are right here with us. If you would like them back in your radio fold, then all you have to do is add X Squared Radio to your program content. The statistics don't lie. We are now the fastest growing talk radio program in North America. Don't be late, because we are about to launch another hour of X Squared Radio. Welcome, Earth Explorers, to X Squared Radio. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. In here, the results are always positive. The solar wind is a mild 377.8 kilometers per second at the moment. There are no sunspots and no coronal holes at the moment. The sun is quiet and stable. The Russians launched an inflatable satellite on July 12th called Genesis. It is a one-third scale prototype made by Bigelow Aerospace, which is a private company aimed to place a manned space station in orbit around Earth, built from the same inflatable models. The smaller prototype is visible in the night sky as a second magnitude star. Look for it around 500 kilometers above sea level. We want to encourage you to write us with the call letters of your local AM radio station. We will write them and try to get X Squared Radio on their program schedule for live broadcast. We want you to know that we are coming to you through the BBS radio network and through the satellite feed via Global Star Radio Network. Next week, we will have on our program John Gress, He is the director and writer of the new digital movie called One Anunnaki. This is not an animated film. This is a film that was entirely shot with digital cameras. And this is a special effects studio called Jaguar Films in Florida. And they are world class. These are the Anunnaki are the ancient astronauts spoken of by many authors. This first movie is set to debut at one of the film festivals this fall, maybe the Sundance Film Festival. But you will have the chance to hear about it first, right here on X Squared Radio, because this is a world premiere interview with John Gress. You don't want to miss it next Sunday at 6 p.m. If you want to stay current on our programs, guests, books, CDs, DVDs, and other outstanding stuff for your space, you can make X Squared Radio your favorite place on the web at x2-radio.com. We want to welcome our AM affiliates and your many requests that this program be placed onto XM and Sirius. I believe that everything we do will eventually affect the universe, and your efforts are having their effect, and I appreciate it. I'm glad you're listening, because tonight our guest is Brent Miller. He graduated from the University of Illinois in electrical engineering. His distinguished career expanded his technical capabilities, and he was acknowledged as an e-commerce expert by IBM, an advanced futures trader, and an expert in multiple programming languages and database systems. He has personally amassed 32 United States patents for advancements in human interface recognition software, artificial intelligence applications, and data transmission protocols and analysis. Mr. Miller also went on to hold the highest technical executive positions in several New York-based Fortune 100 companies, including Gray Direct, Bates Worldwide. He now has a lifelong dedication to the Horizon Project research team, continually seeking truth, working with many of the world's most brilliant minds to unlock the big picture to our world. He focuses his time on advancing remote viewing as a skill and is personally responsible for advancements regarding remote viewing protocol and accuracy. And his brand new wife would want me to recognize that he also dedicates his time to her. Please welcome with me Brent Miller. How are you this evening?
Oh, very well, Dr. Agnew, and I really appreciate, again, having you, honor me with being a guest on your program. It's a great honor.
Oh, it's my pleasure. The last time we had Mr. Miller on the program, we had a wonderful show, just lots and lots of listeners, and we had technical problems. Something happened. We're not really sure what. The entire show disappeared off our database. It didn't exist anywhere. So we decided to reschedule it this month, and we are going to conduct this interview again. And, of course, there's many more neat things that we can include in this interview for you. And we also have a lot more listeners tonight because each week X Squared Radio and BBS Radio Network is growing and growing. My understanding from our producer is we are currently with the network in the top 20,000 websites in the world, which is a pretty good accomplishment for an independent radio network. Anyway, I'm sure that many of our listeners have heard the term remote viewing, but I'm positive just about everyone has a misconception about it. So this first hour, let's tell our listeners all about what it is, who can do it, and maybe we'll vanquish some myths about it. But first, I would like you to give us an update on the Horizon Project production. How soon will our listeners be able to obtain a DVD of this production?
The Horizon Project is now almost complete. I have one flight to Washington State tomorrow, in fact, and the product will go into full production on Tuesday, which means in 3 weeks it ships, which means we have about 3 weeks left if anybody wants to take advantage of the pre-order discount. We are supplying a discount for the first DVD because of the delay. They'll have to wait for about 3 weeks before they receive it in the mail.
Of course.
We're very, very anxious about this. This has been a two-year project, and the first DVD is about to be released. The remaining three DVDs in the four-disc set will subsequently come out every 3 months after this first one.
Well, I'm really excited about it. By the way, you can go to X Squared Radio or BBS Radio, and you can click on the Horizon Project banner. And this will take you to a website where you can look at a really short trailer about it. There are other productions that your company has put out. I think one of them is called Kill Shot.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And, of course, these are meant to arouse your faculties. These are meant to expose you to facts and figures and testimonies from experts around the world and get you ready for events that have been viewed that are going to occur on this earth. We want you to be ready for them. And if you're a listener to this program, maybe you can move out of the way. So how did you come up with the idea for the Horizon Project?
Well, my background, as you know, is rather technical. And being in many of the industry fields, it became readily apparent that most fields have contradictory and conflicting theories, postulates, and axioms about pretty much every subject within those fields. Even though you have these contradictions within the field, these contradictions also contradict theories about any particular event as presented by experts in another field. In other words, you have very well-learned, extremely intelligent, educated doctors, lawyers, scientists, no, not lawyers, but doctors and scientists all around the world who truly are experts in their field, and with the best of their knowledge, they come up with theories as to why certain things happen. Astrophysics, cosmology, geology, ancient civilizations, rises and falls, ancient technologies, DNA, mitochondria, mutation. But ironically, if you look at evidence collected by other fields, they contradict each other. They contradict each other to the point where most of the theories that any specialty generates are proven wrong over time. It just seems to be the nature of science and the way that mankind has subspecialized in each field. We work in such tight niches. We are an expert about such a small niche. We don't have a broad approach where we see that something in astrophysics will help something in dentistry, or some field specialization in dentistry will help the geologists who drill core samples in the ice at the North Pole. At first they seem very diverse from each other, and they have nothing to do with each other. But when you step back and look at the big picture, all science is related to each other. So the Horizon Project wasn't originally called the Horizon Project. It was a collection of, started out as a small collection of scientists from around the world to look at various events in some of the most technical fields, quantum physics, astrophysics, geology, and genetic research. And what each field showed, each field that shows chronology through world history, it showed basically gaps in human history. None of these fields, because of the specialization of the scientists within those fields, knew that these same gaps existed in other fields dissimilar from them. So no one basically compared notes. But when we stepped back and took a look at all of these various specialties, we see a cyclic pattern of gaps in paleontology, genetics, ice core samples, where you have a repeating pattern of, say, cosmic dust, which is dropped in very thin layers very quickly, and then 10,000 years later, exact same pattern over and over again, which corresponds to basically the rise and fall of civilizations and a rise and fall of life on this planet. That piqued our interest tremendously, because all of a sudden, the intent of pulling the scientists together to weed out the bad theories from the good theories changed. The intent was no longer to determine, what are the most accurate and precise theories in each field by correlating all the data in all the fields. That is still an overall picture, but the intent has changed. Before we could do that, we needed to collect all the information from all the specialties to determine what was the cause of these cyclic, what we refer to as human reset points, human evolution reset points or civilization points. And that led to some unbelievably startling discoveries that these reset points were dramatic, catastrophic, very much instantaneous with regard to Earth history, where we think in terms of millennia or even millions of years. To realize that these reset points happen within a matter of weeks or months or even 1 or 2 years and not thousands and thousands of years. So what was causing such an exact and abrupt catastrophic global disaster to the planet, and then suddenly it disappeared, and thousands of years later it would happen again, thousands of years later it would happen again. That was our first dilemma. And the reason it was called the Horizon Project is because the cyclic pattern was pinned down as to when the next occurrence would happen. And what we had unfortunately discovered, we say that because it was shocking to all of us, is that this next cycle point should be approximately now. That enough time, enough thousands of years has passed in this very precise resetting of human evolution that the next one is literally right around the corner, and hence the name for the project was referred to as the Horizon Project. That name we created about a year and a half ago, and all of our research and efforts have been toward this project to determine the precise details of it from the viewpoint of many, many different fields, including all the ancient texts that we could have amassed. And we have linguists, people who study ancient cultures, ancient civilizations, geologists, some of the most world-renowned experts in various fields in order to pull the data together. So the Horizon Project was born, and we discovered something that is unbelievably important, that in the next few years, what is coming up over the horizon. We use mostly scientific information for that, but we do use remote viewing, which is an incredibly powerful tool, which assisted us in pointing the researchers and scientists in the right direction to put the pieces of the puzzle together. And
PhDs, we become experts in a little pinhole of light, of knowledge. But very rarely do we get together and say, okay, I know this piece, and you know that piece. And I guess in government we call these summits, and sometimes we call them conferences. But what you've done is, I believe you've gone around the world and you found the experts in each field, several of them, and brought them together and pooled all of the expertise together to paint this picture. And then what you've done, used it as a guide, who to bring to the table and what story to tell with this information. You've used remote viewing.
That's absolutely correct. The problem with the data that we've collected, there is no problem with the data. What I should say is the data is so overwhelming, so unbelievably amassed around the world, all of these clues as to the history of the planet and our inevitable future. There is so much data. Our dilemma was trying to figure out how to reduce literally thousands of hours of recorded information with interviews from around the world. In fact, I have one final interview tomorrow in Seattle with an expert in ancient technologies. And what data to, how do you summarize the information in only 2 hours? Because that's what we can put on a DVD. It's nearly impossible. And so we have put together the most important points on the first 2 hour DVD with a total of 4 DVDs. But what is coming over the horizon, which is and will be carefully explained in the first DVD, is only the very beginning of the picture. The remaining 3 DVDs will explain more about who and what we are. We are not just basically, physical. There is more to humans. And remote viewing shows us this as well. We do live in a sea of information in connected to, say, a global kind of consciousness that we can use to assist us in our daily lives. And there is more to life than just this, you know, short 80-year span we're on this planet.
I certainly hope so.
We're very pleased to present this. And we do know that because of the time frame we're in, we need to get this out as fast as possible. So we're taking all kinds of shortcuts in order to present this information. Like yourself, Dr. Agnew, with your books, I've read The Ark of Millions of Years, both Volume 1 and 2, and it is unbelievably amazing that, you know, there's so much evidence not only gathered from yourself from one viewpoint, but ours from another viewpoint, and there's many ancient texts spanning hundreds of years that all say the same thing. So all of the information is there. It's just amazing to us now, living in the 21st century, where we consider ourselves civilized and so high-tech, that this knowledge and the evidence is right under our feet. And only now are we starting to see it, and yet we're right at the end of this era of mankind, as well, this fourth era, as the Hopis have indicated.
You know, as I do various interviews, and I just talk to people on the street or in business, and I don't really go into a lot of detail, but I ask them questions like, do you feel like, you know, we're at the end of time, or do you think something marvelous is about to happen, or something terrible? Almost to a person, none of them think everything is going to continue just as it is now. They all have, of course, it's inexplicable to them. They don't have any details. They don't have any information, but they know they're looking for something. They know there are some clues, some marker that they're looking for that will show them the information that they feel is out there. And they're just going off of feelings. And many people sort of say that their feelings are deceiving them, or that they can be deceived by their feelings. But they're looking for facts. They're looking, and this is why I believe, you know, Sci-Fi Channel, Discovery Channel, History Channel, even National Geographic, a real mainstream kind of informational channel, you know, used to be about geography and anthropology. Now they're starting to bring on more of what we used to term paranormal subjects. And even they sense that the public is really, really hungry for this information. So let's talk about remote viewing. What is it? I mean, is there a specific protocol that makes it a function, makes it a reliable tool?
Remote viewing, if I could summarize it in one word, it would be a skill. It is a skill that anyone can learn, and this skill provides you with direct knowledge. As you know, direct knowledge, it takes you straight to the source. There's no opinion, there's no guesswork. It is considered an absolute. It provides you direct knowledge and answers to basically anything you wish to know in any time, past, present, or future, about any event. There are practically no limits to the knowledge you can have. Everything that you could ask is an open book to everyone, and it always has been. We are living in this sea of information. We only now are starting to rediscover that this knowledge is there and always has been. The ancient Chinese have always known this knowledge was there. They referred to it as, they gave it a name, the Akashic Records. But let me get back to remote viewing, and I'll talk about the source of the knowledge later. The term remote viewing, per se, does not refer so much to the knowledge we require, but to the protocol and the steps used to gather the information about whatever question you have. Just like solving a problem requires a student to follow a very precise sequence of steps to derive a solution, say a calculus problem, remote viewers have to follow a protocol that, when followed, it gives you the answers to your questions piece by piece until you have assembled it into the solution to the problem or question that you have. And without a doubt, It is probably the most powerful mind tool that anyone has available to them today due to the accuracy and unbelievably powerful method of gathering direct knowledge. And I do want to emphasize again, the knowledge that you gather is independent of time. So I could ask, you could ask a question, where is my friend's lost dog now? And it will tell you where your friend's lost dog is to help him. Or you can say, you can ask similar questions like, next day's New York Times front page primary photo. That is just as easy to get an answer, and the remote viewers will draw precisely what is tomorrow morning New York Times primary photo. So future events and past events are no more difficult or less difficult than each other. The information you get is simply viewed as information. So it leads us to many other questions about remote viewing. But that, in essence, is what it is. It is a specific protocol that was devised or derived from the military's research and the FBI's research at Stanford Research Institute for about 10 years with very, very naturally gifted psychics, one in particular, Ingo Swann. Now, I say the research was done with naturally gifted psychics, but remote viewing is not a psychic functioning that we refer to as a psychic functioning. You can be like me, who is as psychic as a rock, and do exceptionally well. In fact, psychic functioning tends to reduce your ability because you tend to rely on your imagination, when remote viewing relies on no imagination whatsoever. But the protocol was derived by studying natural psychics to see how they derive and recall the information, and by studying only the sessions where they were on, which, by the way, was extremely rare for a psychic to be on. They're off almost all the time. But the few times they're on, if you look at all the common elements and create a protocol, you can teach a person to do that same mental process, and they are on all the time. That protocol, that process, is what we refer to as remote viewing. It is not remote, and there's no viewing involved, but unfortunately the term remote viewing stuck with us. Remote viewing is actually the protocol we use to get an answer to any question we have.
Are there any real statistics out there for how often a psychic really is on? Like, I think we used to have a famous psychic named Jean Dixon, and oh, she would make the headlines with one or two predictions every other year, but she managed to get herself a headline in several, you know, papers and make herself wealthy because of it. But really, how often are they really on?
That's a good question. Let me compare psychics with remote viewing. Like, I want to make perfectly clear, Brooks, that remote viewing is not a psychic functioning, even though it may appear to be. I would liken it to a person opening their eyes and looking around the room. What they're really doing is their eyes are receiving energy fields from around the room. The energy fields are in patterns of wavelengths of light bouncing off at various angles. So in other words, it's a form of energy which your mind translates into information. You do it so effortlessly and naturally that you take it for granted. Remote viewing is identical to that. You put your mind in a state of mind where you receive the information and put it together, and the sea of information is there, past, present, and future. So to me, it's equivalent to, and to all the remote viewers who really learn the protocol, it's equivalent to literally opening your eye. It is not a psychic functioning. But let's compare the accuracy of remote viewing data with psychics or truly gifted natural psychics. A natural psychic will be, quote, on target 1-3% of the time. That is why most people, when they hear that a person is psychic, they kind of hem-haw, think it's great, but they don't really pay much attention to it, because over the course of their life, they've heard of so many psychic predictions that are wrong, but the one or two that are dead on, and they're absolutely dead on, it perks our ears up, and we ask, how did they do that? How did they know? They must have been involved. They must have had inside information. No, they actually for that 1 to 3% of the time, their mind went to the true direct source of information, the same source that remote viewers go to all the time. Now, so a psychic, a naturally gifted psychic, is on 1 to 3% of the time. The 97% plus of the time that they're off, they don't really know they're off. They have no clue as to whether they're on or off. So every time they give an opinion, they give it with total confidence and total reliability that I am totally on, yet 30 times out of 31 times, they're wrong. But it's that 1% that really piques our imagination. A remote viewer, on the other hand, it is a attention management skill. You teach your mind to follow a direct protocol, which you start out with a cue, which is basically a question. It's our technical term for the question. It's formulated in a very precise way. The cue directs our subconscious or unconscious to the target, the answer. The answer being anything in the past, present, or future. So our subconscious moves to that point in time, say in the future. We then follow the protocol to acquire data about that event in the future. And the protocol brings up the information in a form that we can compile and analyze to give us the answer. Now, as far as accuracy goes, there's two steps to accuracy. And it's important, Brooks, to know both. A remote viewer is on target 100% of the time.
Wow.
I do not say that lightly. And you have the audience, or people who might be listening, or you might believe that this is impossible. Nothing is that accurate. If you follow the protocol, you are on 100% of the time, unlike a natural psychic who's on only about 3% of the time top.
And you're saying that anyone's unconscious mind can be directed through this protocol?
Anyone, from a 10-year-old child to an 80-year-old, adult. Anyone who can follow directions and focus on the protocol has no difficulty in doing this. I need to add a caveat, a very serious caveat about that, on target 100% of the time.
Wow.
When a person is on target, when a remote viewer follows the protocol, they are on target. But remember, we're human. We can never shut off our analytical mind, and we can never shut off fully our creative imagination. So while we are writing down the data, our mind, our analytical mind, we see what we're writing. We see the drawings that we're making. And our own creative imagination and our own analytical mind pull the information together. Yellow, soft, fruity, elongated, cylinder, curved. Oh, must be a banana. Your own analytical mind generated the banana idea from the data. Therefore, it introduces error. So even though you are on target, only 80% of the data is accurately portrays to the target itself. But nevertheless, you are still on target. Now, if you have two remote viewers, and you both give them the target blind, meaning you don't tell them what the question is. You just simply say, here's a target, give me the answer. Both of them will come back with being on target, but only 80% of each of their data individually will be accurate. But if you look at where their data overlaps, the overlapping data has a high probability and a high 90% of being accurate. Three remote viewers, 100% accurate. To give you an example, if I were to cut out a picture of, say, a National Geographic, this would be such a very simple target for any remote viewer. In fact, the very beginner remote viewer within the first day or two could do this. If I were to cut out a picture of a National Geographic and throw it in an envelope and give two remote viewers saying, I have a picture in this envelope, what is it? 20 minutes later, one remote viewer would draw a picture and say, okay, we have a bird, a vulture sitting on a cactus in front of a mountain with the sun setting, and there's a pebble on the ground. The second remote viewer says, we have a bird is sitting on a cactus with a mountain in the background with a turtle on the ground. Second remote viewer missed the sun. The first remote viewer said it was a rock. The second one said it was a turtle. Throw out the rock and turtle, or whatever that thing is on the ground, and throw out the sun. So the overlapping data has a bird, we won't call it a vulture because he, his analytical mind substituted the word vulture at too high level at the first initial pass. So a bird sitting on a cactus in front of a mountain, and that is 100% accurate. So that whether that thing on the ground is a pebble or a turtle would be another session. Now we target that item in both cases, give it back to the people, and then they would both very accurately describe, say, a rock that had this shape on the back that looked like a turtle. So remote viewing is also a self-correcting process. The more information you wish to obtain, the more it corrects the misinformation your own analytical mind and creative imagination will generate as the data comes in. So there is a big difference between psychics and remote viewing. That's why I do not call this a psychic functioning. You're always on, and the information is reliable. It is, in fact, the most advanced mind tool that I think anybody will ever come up with in their life.
Wow. So, do you have any ideas on how the unconscious or subconscious mind actually experiences these events, or is it just, is it always images? Is it numbers? Do they go by impressions, or is there some kind of sifting process that they do?
I believe it's more of a sifting process. In fact, they were studying the best natural psychics for years and years. Of course, they're off most of the time, but when they're on, they would videotape all the sessions, and when they're off, they throw all those ones that they were off away. And they would keep reviewing the videotapes as to when they're on. And finally, after years and years, I want to give you the very genesis of remote viewing and how the protocol just started. And I think this is pertinent to the question you just asked. And it's a very important question.
Okay.
When the, psychic was on, for instance, here's a question, what's the answer? And the psychic just starts drawing. Whatever they were doing in their head, they happened to be on this time. It was noticed after many, many, many years of videotaping by doctors reviewing the tapes over and over and over again and technicians reviewing it, that whenever they were on, right before they started, immediately, within a fraction of a second before they started their session, 100% of the time, their fingers and their hand would jigger. The question would ask, and their fingers or hand would jigger. In other words, what we refer to this as, what remote viewers refer to this as, is the answer to the question. Whenever your mind forcibly cues a question with no ambiguity, it's an exact question which has an exact answer. That's why the question has to be very carefully formulated. Kind of like a Google search on the internet. Without getting 10,000 results, you only get one. So you formulate the question precisely, and the moment you say mentally, give me the answer, within a third of a second, every time, that answer is impeded on the person's autonomic nervous system, and their nervous system literally reacts and changes.
How about that?
And it moves their fingers. The answer, the information is literally shot into them almost as if it's electric, and it causes a sodium-potassium synaptic change in their body. And the protocol from that instant forward, we refer to that initial answer as the gestalt, a compressed zip file of the answer. And the entire protocol, you have then been given the answer at that moment. The entire protocol from that point on is to separate that gestalt in the various ideograms and the deciphering and decoding of the ideograms, and then pulling the pieces together of the data collected from each of the subcomponents into a final answer. So it is a very long, drawn-out process, but provides direct knowledge. The question is, we have always lived, you know, humans have always lived for thousands of years with this capability, and various civilizations have known it and have used it. We seem to have lost this ability for the last couple thousand years.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you if you thought that ancient civilizations had this ability.
Oh, there's no doubt. Absolutely no doubt about it. In fact, ancient civilizations' texts even called it names. The priest would use it to talk to God, extracting information from direct knowledge, which was always unambiguous, always direct, and always accurate. So no matter what the question is, you know, various civilizations. Chinese, like I mentioned before, you know, 2,000, 3,000 years BC called it the Akashic Record. Today, the modern remote viewers call it the Matrix. And in fact, the movie The Matrix pulled their title from the Sea of Information.
Really?
So they pulled that term from remote viewers. And you, if you went through the Matrix trilogy, you can see why. Because most of the state of the average human in the movie was living in a computer matrix frame, which was a virtual world.
Huh. So now, if they had these abilities, then they were able to see impending cataclysms, a lot like the island, the population that managed to avoid being destroyed in the tsunami a couple of years ago in December. They didn't have an early warning system. All they had was just the feeling of the shaman of their village that they needed to move to higher ground. So they did, and none of them were even injured in the tsunami. But nevertheless, their village was in direct line of the tidal wave. So you think that that these ancients, if they had this ability, they were probably honored. They were probably held up by their communities and not chastised or outcast like our society.
There is no doubt in my mind that they had these abilities. To give you an idea how easy what you're saying would come to pass, even if they didn't try to look at future events, they naturally get a future event, no matter, even if they don't try, because the source of the information is not only benevolent, it is trying to be and absolutely honest and truthful, but it tries to give you information, more information than you asked for, while answering your question, if it's going to help you in the future. To give you a very small example, the military remote viewing team that was created as a result of trying to perfect the remote viewing protocol right when the FBI and CIA took it over and pulled it out of Stanford Research Institute and made it top secret and turned it into black ops. Of course, the military wants to use it for military purpose, spy on their enemies during the Cold War, that kind of stuff.
Sure, we're always talking about federal intelligence.
I mean, if Russia does it, India, you know, China does it, we have to do it kind of thing. So, but we did everything in a very scientific way, and we actually created a protocol. To the surprise of us, you could teach this protocol to anyone, and anyone can learn it. And you can learn it very, very quickly. Within a few days, you're already mastering the basics. Now, this military protocol, they were concerned with future events. Well, what is this? What is Hussein going to do, basically, pre-Gulf War? What are his plans? Well, if he does this, how do we counter? That kind of thing. So their targets were more directly or indirectly resulting to future events. But when they were learning remote viewing protocol and they were creating it, their cues would be off, because asking the exact question necessary is part of the art form of remote viewing. You have to ask a single precise question. If you don't, the Matrix must answer your question precisely, even if it's not what you intended. Your intention is meaningless. It has to answer the question that's asked, not what you intended. So if you look at the exact question that was asked many times, it left it open for future events. So the Matrix would answer the future event. And so what because of their inability to understand what they were, to ask precisely, technically driven questions to get the exact answer they want, what they got several times is future events related to their exact question, which were impacts of asteroids hitting Earth, cataclysms that would hit Earth, upper winds of the Gulf Stream coming down to the deck in 300-mile-an-hour winds racing across the mid-plains of North America, plasma streams shooting out from the sun, searing part of the planet. All of these events the military coined as ambiguous. It obviously wasn't what they wanted, so they would put the data aside and redo the cues and get the answer they wanted. But if you look at all of these blind questions from all these military-trained remote viewers over a period of years, you saw a very, very serious picture happening. They were all pointing to an event in the immediate future, a future that we're coming up to very quickly. So even though they didn't particularly want that information, they got it whether they wanted it or not, because the matrix, or the source of the information, is trying to warn us. So that if, and remember, this is only in modern society, and we're talking a very few number of people, as the protocol was starting to be developed in the early 80s, that are doing this, and all of a sudden they're getting events in the immediate future. If we're talking about an ancient civilization where there were thousands of people who were expert, equivalent remote viewers, it wouldn't be remote viewing, but it would be a more or less a prayer-type protocol, I would assume, where they would tap into the source of direct knowledge. This same source would help them and warn them of future events. And so I can very easily see how if you have a society whose intent is not based on the acquisition of property and, you know, riches, but the acquisition of knowledge and understanding the world in which they live, how remote viewing would provide them decades, if not hundreds of years in advance of an event coming into the future, so that the society as a whole could prepare for it.
And survive,
yes.
So now you say that when remote viewers, you know, produce on-target results, the results are identical no matter who views it?
Within 80%, yes. If you have teams, there is an exception. If you create a team, say a team of six remote viewers, and you give them all the same target, the source of the information knows you have a team right there. It also knows you're going to analyze the information from all the remote viewers. The remote viewers are blind. They don't know what the question is. So the source of the information is benevolent and it's intelligent. It knows that, you know, it's just a pure waste of time to give each person the identical information. What's the point? So what it does, it's your best friend. It gives information, it splits out the project instantaneously to the five or six different people based on their skill sets, their mindsets, and their ability to decipher and analyze the information in a manner which would provide the most possible information to the analyst at the time he's analyzing the information. In other words, to make the results speedier and more efficient. Let me give you an example. I want to give you an example that is really mind-blowing.
Okay.
The source of the information knows the future, every possible facet of the future that you could even imagine. We think of the future as our future because we haven't yet lived it. To the source of the information, it's already history.
Right, the future has already occurred.
Yet. So, you ask a person a question, for instance, let's say it's a military target. An ambassador of such and such country was kidnapped. The first question you want to give the remote viewer is, what country is he in? And he has a blind target, and part of the blind target is he's to draw a flag of the current country the ambassador is being held in. He draws a flag of the country. The analyst, he still doesn't know what the target is. The remote viewer doesn't. The analyst knows what the target is because he gave it to him blind. The analyst gets the flag back, and he gets out his little flag book, and he whips onto the flag book. Mind you, the source of the information knows the exact flag book that the analyst is going to be looking at. This flag book so happens to be 50 years old, and the flag that the ambassador is held in, that flag has changed 10 different times in the last 50 years. But it doesn't matter, because the source of the information knows that the analyst is going to use this old, obsolete, outdated flag book to compare the results. So the source of the information gives the remote viewer the flag, the exact flag, that's going to match the flag book that the analyst is using, which is outdated.
Really?
Yes. Because it knows that it needs to match it up. And so even if that's not the current flag, that's the country it's in. That's the country the ambassador is being held in. So the source of the information is not only benevolent, but it's dynamic and extremely intelligent. And it's a source that is outside of our time. And it's something that we can all access directly.
Hmm. Well, I can't wait to learn the skill myself. I want to get the CD, the training CDs, and I'm going to learn this skill myself. And and then we'll see what happens.
Yeah. Well, let me give you an example that you will find in when Major Ed Dames was the operations and training officer for the top secret remote viewing program. It had various names, Stargate, etc., while it was in the military. It was being used by many different branches of the government, CIA, FBI, you know, some special projects for members of Congress. And so he and a number of other people brought the protocol out of the military to train civilians with this incredibly powerful tool. During training sessions, like one about two years ago, I think it was, to show you, to give you the real world right now example of how the source of the information is dynamic. It tries to help you with information that, even though you don't ask for it, it tries to give you more than what you ask for, because it's important that you know. This also goes back to your question, well, would ancient civilizations know that something in the future is coming? And this is a perfect example. Yes, they would, because the source of information is trying to help you know the future, even if you don't ask for it. This was during the Super Bowl. I think it was 2 years ago, or possibly 3 years ago, that Major Dames had a class of 40 students teaching them, and this was the second day. This is remote viewing students who are only just been introduced to remote viewing protocol. And it was a Sunday, and that afternoon, the two teams were playing in the Super Bowl. And he gave the entire class the blind, he wrote out the cue, hidden from the class, assigned the class a TRN, which is a target reference number, which points to the cue. So everybody in the class is totally blind as to what the question is. But the cue was basically this afternoon's game. I won't go into the exact cue because it's kind of a technical description. But this afternoon's game, the winning team, their home state's most recognizable feature. Now, recognizable is something a person sees with their eye. So every person sees would recognize an item or an event from a particular state in a different way. If you've been to Florida, for example, you would recognize, and if you went to Disneyland, you would probably say Epcot Center is probably home state's most recognizable feature. There is no Epcot Center anywhere else in any of the other 50 states. So that, to you, you would identify the Epcot Center as being Florida. Therefore, the team that came from Florida was the winning team of the Super Bowl. In this particular year, the winning team was Florida. And the people from the class were interesting. Every single person got very significant features of Florida. About half the class got the space shuttle, Cape Canaveral in Florida. Now, of that half a class, half of those, 25% of the class, got the space shuttle in flight blowing up as it streaked across two states.
Really?
10 people in that class that day, yes, they got the answer. The most significant feature, recognizable feature to them of the winning team that afternoon was Florida. Therefore, the winning team was Florida. Not only did it give them the answer, but it says, as long as you ask me this question, I'm going to give you some additional information. The space shuttle is going to blow up, basically. And it's going to streak across the sky and, you know, be spread over two states. 2 weeks later, that event happened. Now, during the class, and this was all on film, filmed in real time, the students asked the Major Dames, well, is this going to happen or not going to happen? And his answer was, you still don't understand remote viewing, do you? It's direct knowledge. It already happened.
Yeah.
There is nothing you can do to stop it. It's already history to the source of the information.
In physics,
it's just warning you.
In physics, we say that, you know, all futures occur. All probabilities are not only possible, but they all occur. It just happens that we're on this timeline with this particular set of future events. I think the fact that remote viewing teams get the same answer means that in large part only one future happens for them. But like you say, they use their perspective. The thing that they would recognize the most is the thing that they see in the stream of information that comes at them, And this is the image that they record. I would really be curious to know what their reaction was 2 weeks later when they saw that on the news.
Yeah.
I know I'm not saying that I'm a remote viewer, but I've had, maybe let's call them premonitions. I'm no psychic, maybe a little more psychic than a rock, but not much. And major events have happened. Of course, all of them disasters. I don't dream of Super Bowl winnings. If I did, I wouldn't be here in Western Kentucky. But when they happen, I recognize them. And I think, like many people out there, we get impressions. We get more than impressions. Maybe dreams. Maybe even visions or sounds or smells of events that are going to occur. And this source of knowledge, which we're going to talk about more in our second hour, of course, is available to everyone. And this protocol, although it may have existed anciently, I think since that time up until maybe the mid-50s of the last century, it was lost. We didn't have that protocol. It was considered fortune-telling, soothsaying. It was, not only forbidden but discouraged by the church, and probably still is today. If you look at certain interpretations of the scriptures, you could say this is fortune-telling or soothsaying, but it is not. It is a technical science of an ability of tapping into a flowing form of information about events that have already occurred. We just happen to be on a certain place on this future timeline. It's difficult for most humans to understand. The future for us is in the future, but the future isn't in the future for these records, is it?
No, but that's not to say we don't have free will. I do believe at this exact moment in time that every person has total free will, and everyone on this planet directs their future. There's infinite number of future possibilities and future timelines.
Right.
But as each moment goes by, we have sealed our fate. The word I just spoke a few seconds ago has already been spoken. It is now locked. The word I speak a few seconds from now, I can choose anything I desire. So I do have free will. But once I execute that free will, it then becomes locked. But I do believe that the source of the information, almost unfathomable to me, already exists outside of our chronological timeline and is literally looking at what our decisions were. Not that we don't have free will to make them. I believe everyone has free will. So it's kind of a paradox to me. I have difficulty trying to grasp it, but that does what all the evidence does show that is what the source of the information is about.
Wow. Well, that concludes our first hour. Our guest is Brent Miller. We're talking about remote viewing, and this is X Squared Radio. We're going to take about 5 minutes or so for some commercials, and then we will be right back after this. Foundations of religion and science were used to restore knowledge lost for over 6,000 years in our first book. The Ark of Millions of Years, Volume 2, called 2012 and Harvest of the End Times, brings us vital knowledge for the race of mankind. Have the Watchers returned? What did the Aztecs mean by their ancient predictions for the year 2012? Why is Earth changing so rapidly now before our very eyes? Who were the shining ones who lived on the Earth and worked with mankind as they recovered from cataclysm? Who are we? Where did we come from? If you could find a book that answers just one of these questions, you'd buy it. Now there are two in the series that is sweeping the world with its message. Go to arcofmillionsofyears.com and get your autographed copy today. Now, also available in full audio version. You own an inkjet printer, right? I used to purchase my replacement inkjet cartridges at a national superstore that will remain unnamed. A few months ago, I replaced the color and black cartridges, and the cost was nearly $80. Well, no more. Now, I purchase all my inkjet cartridge and copier supplies from 123 Inkjets. Now, I pay less than $15 per cartridge, and I got free shipping. Plus, every time I buy, I have a chance at winning a brand new printer. How cool is that? All you have to do is click on the 123 Inkjets banner at X Squared Radio, and you get exactly the same savings. Excellent printer supplies at super savings at 123 Inkjets at X Squared Radio. There is some place you should visit before the end of the week. The Horizon Project is probably the most important examination of future events in the world today. But there is a reason you should visit their website soon. I can't give you all the details here, but I can tell you that the first DVD in the six-part series is now available for pre-purchase at $5 off. This series will no doubt be airing on the History Channel or Discovery Channel, but you need the uncut version with all of the bonus material. Trust me, it may be one of the most important video productions you will ever see. Click on the Horizon Project banner at X Squared Radio today. You know we have revealed to you the ancient prediction that natural disasters are going to increase in power and frequency in these times. We might not always have the National Weather Service or the Emergency Broadcasting Service. So you might want to get your hands on some of the best weather reporting instruments around. Visit Wind and Weather at X Squared Radio and pick up something that might be useful. They also have the neatest gift for your favorite people who like things for the outdoors or for their meditation garden. Check out Wind and Weather at X Squared Radio. One of the things we have learned here at X Squared Radio from our emails is that many listeners to this program are educators. Well, we have recently added a great affiliate for you. The Academic Superstore is the place where you can buy software, neat tools and gadgets, and even supplies such as calculators and iPod peripherals at huge discounts. The best things for the classroom and for the student are just a tax-free click away. All you have to do is click the Academic Superstore sign at X Squared Radio and start saving. You probably know Kevin Smith as one of the premier talk radio hosts in the world today. Well, now there is a new reason to know the name. His new book, Gods in the Garden. It's a shining light of truth in print that takes us back to the origins of mankind. Don't be afraid to find out who you really are and where you came from. The answer will open the windows of knowledge for you, so you can see everything for yourself. Visit his website at kevinsmithshow.com or purchase it at the online store at X Squared Radio today. Welcome back to X Squared Radio. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. And this is where the past meets the future, and the results are always positive. I wanted to let you know that our broadcast always comes to you free through the BBS Radio Network and, of course, through the Global Star Radio Network. But you can also access the archives for free. We intend to keep it that way as long as we can. We have some added features for you, however. If you go and listen to the archives, you can now podcast the months of June and July. We will go back in the earlier archives, and we will add that feature for that as well. Many of you like the podcast feature, and we appreciate that. The only thing that I ask as host of this program, and you heard the commercials that we record, is that when you go to shop for things, for your space, I call it, is that you check X Squared Radio first. Go and click on those banners. I know all of you have inkjet printers, and you have needs for software and telescopes and all kinds of neat instruments. All I ask is that you check out X Squared Radio first, and try to make those things, those purchases through that means. And that helps us stay on the air, helps us bring you all this information for free, these world-class guests. And unlike other programs out there, we will go as long as we possibly can without charging you anything. We want you to have the knowledge. We want you to have the experience of being here with us at X Squared Radio. My guest tonight is the very fine and one of my close friends, Brent Miller, who is the writer and director of the Horizon Project, but he is also an accomplished remote viewer. And one of the things, at least from my perspective, that makes this so unique is we're not talking about using any instruments other than a protocol and the human mind to accessing information. Now, this hour, we want to talk about where this information actually exists. It doesn't discriminate between one person and another, anyone, regardless of their intention, from what I can understand of what Brent has told me. Has access to this information and can make whatever use of it they wish. But this hour we want to talk about the source. So you mentioned a couple times in the last hour the Akashic Records, and I guess these were kind of made famous by Edgar Cayce. He mentioned that he would access the Akashic Records and the many readings that he did, although he could never remember any of the things that he saw. They would have to be recorded while he was reciting them as he slept. Now, that happened to be his protocol, his method of accessing them. But can you tell us what are the Akashic Records, actually?
First, let you know that we truly do not know the source of the information. It has a number of names, the Akashic Records and the Matrix. However, we truly do not know. We can give you attributes and we can give you what we do know that it is not. And we can give you hints and suggestions as what we believe it is.
Well, that can be just as helpful, knowing what it's not. By the way, I forgot to tell you that if you want to call in, we do appreciate your phone calls. We will open the lines this hour and next hour. The phone number is there on the BBS radio network or on X Squared radio network. It is, I have it written down here somewhere in my notes. I keep forgetting my own call-in number. 877, I have to turn to the page. You keep talking and I'll find the page where my call-in number is.
Let me see. What is the source of the information? The source of the information, as I indicated before, is what the current remote viewers refer to as the Matrix, which is identical to what the ancient Chinese thousands of years ago referred to as the Akashic Records. When Edgar Cayce was actually posed that question, the modern sleeping prophet, the only terminology for the source of the information that existed in our modern lexicon was called the Akashic Records from ancient Chinese. That's probably why he said it, because saying anything else at that point in time would make no sense to people. So we are referring to the same sea of information that we seem to be living in. Our unconscious minds has direct attachment to this source of information. When I say that, what I'm actually saying is that your unconscious mind, right this moment, Dr. Agnew, knows all the past, all the present, and all the future. It knows everything. Basically, it's omnipotent. It has direct access to all knowledge in the past, present, or future about any subject you want. The trick is our conscious mind knows very, very little to nothing about directly accessing this knowledge. Remote viewing protocol transfers the knowledge from unconscious awareness to conscious awareness, and the protocol is what we use to filter the knowledge upward. Now, the Akashic Records was also given various names and descriptions by races and civilizations who accessed it but didn't call it the Akashic Records. Priests would refer to it as the mind of God. Some religious texts refer to it as the book of life. The Akashic Records, or should I say the source of the information, at first remote viewing protocol was directed toward static events. So literally tens of thousands of static events were queued up in question to get answers to static questions. So initially, the source was thought to be static, but nevertheless, static for the future, static for the past. So basically, we thought of it as a static field. In fact, the ancient Chinese made it very, very clear that it was not static because it was dynamic. It changed its information on occasion when future events were very pressing and meaningful, like the example I gave you with the space shuttle. That showed a future event which was, in fact, dynamic to give you more information about what was about to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But we did learn that it is not static. The term significant or is personal. So if I say what is significant to me, I get a different answer to what is significant to somebody else for the same question. Accessible, reliable, obtainable, all of these words are subjective type of words. So the matrix or the source of the information will alter the data for each person individually based on their concepts of accessible, reliable, obtainable, that sort of thing.
Right.
Now, we then thought, or should I say, I grouped myself in terms of remote viewers over the last 20 years. We then thought that the source of the information is global human consciousness. In other words, even though we live, the source of the information is outside of time, it's nevertheless human. If any human on Earth, past, present, or future, ever thinks anything or knows anything, then we are tapping into that massive pool of information called global human consciousness. I'm not sure where that concept came from, so that we can ask a question, and if the answer is in that global pool, we instantly get the answer. That concept was immediately rolled out, because you can ask questions that you know for a fact that no human on Earth, past, present, or future, even billions of years from now, if we live that long, could ever know. For example, I could ask the question, what is the internal crystalline matrix structure of the largest boulder sitting on the smallest moon orbiting Pluto at this exact moment?
Right. That doesn't exist in the human consciousness.
Odds are it couldn't exist ever in human consciousness. Because we need to, the question is, right now, what is the, you know, anyway, you still get the answer. You also get the answer to questions about civilizations that aren't even on this planet. You get the answer to anything you would wish to know, past, present, or future. So we're talking about a source of information that is not human. It's outside of human. The source of the information also, the record, can also give you two parts. You can never, ever obtain an answer without its context. Because answers without context don't mean anything. So if you ever, if in remote viewing, if you ask a question, you not only get the answer to your question, but you get the context of the answer. That places a framework to the answer, which is then ambiguous. Unambiguous, so that there's no possible room for misinterpretation. So the source of the information is also very, very precise. As you had indicated, Dr. Agnew, the source of the information also doesn't care who asks it. It's almost like, if I may use an old phrase, the sun shines on the good and the bad alike. The source of the information doesn't care what your intent is.
Hmm.
It will give you the information you ask.
Anybody can check a book out of the library.
Exactly. Anybody can check out a copy of the book. Also, we do know other things. Every thought that you think, I'm going to pick on you, doctor, because I know you're a good sport about this. Every thought that you think or will ever think goes into this record-keeping system. It goes directly into this, say, global tape recorder, universal tape recorder, say, for the galaxy. Every thought you think, every action you make is already in there. All the source of the information goes outside of time. It goes to that database, and it pulls the information down from the, quote, tree of life, Akashic records, matrix, or book of life.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, when a remote viewer, for instance, I want to know what is on Dr. Brooks Agnew's mind, most pressing, uppermost thoughts, now. I am not actually going into the mind of Dr. Agnew to see what is the most pressing thought on his mind, which could be, you know, what are we having for dinner? You know, how many people are, you know, what is Brent, how is Brent going to embarrass me in the next few seconds kind of question. I mean, where I am going is the source of the information. I'm going to the Akashic Records. You are feeding the data into it. I'm going to the same source, reading the data out. I am not going into you. There is no remote viewing. I mean, no remote influencing. Nobody can block a person from, quote, reading their mind. Because I know that's what a lot of people have asked. Well, can somebody block a remote viewer from reading? No, it's not possible. Because you are not even part of the equation. Your thoughts go into this universal tape recorder, if you will, and the remote viewer goes to that same tape recorder and pulls out a copy.
Hmm. Well, if our listeners would like to be part of the equation tonight and have your thoughts affect the universe and be listened to in the archives, you can reach us from anywhere in North America at 877-876-5227. That number is at the top of bbsradio.com and also at the top of x2-radio.com. That's 877-876-5227 from anywhere in North America, toll free. You can speak to Mr. Miller and myself tonight. Well, so the Akashic Records are like this record that has been made of all events, thoughts, images, constructions in the whole universe. A lot of people think that might be a stretch, but let me see if I can throw a little bit of physics on this. And we have talked before about entangled particles. It is possible to take two particles which display this entangled behavior off of the same molecule or molecular or electron cloud, take these two particles and separate them an infinite distance. As soon as you affect one particle, that is to say, reverse its spin, the other particle will reverse its spin instantaneously. And by that, I mean faster than the speed of light. There is some inexplicable connection between these two pieces of matter, and anything that affects one instantaneously affects the other. This has been demonstrated time and time again. In 1999, it was demonstrated 11 kilometers apart. And now there is an experiment to do it with 6 beryllium atoms separated by as far as we can send a satellite into space. The ramifications of this are phenomenal. Not just interstellar or intergalactic communication instantaneously without having to wait for the speed of light to carry a radio wave or a laser beam from one place to another, but instantaneous binary information sent from one place in the universe to the other because of this entangled property between these two pieces of matter. Now, if that can be done between two pieces of matter, then it can be done between two packets of energy. And if it can be done between two packets of energy, then this record, this Akashic record, or the Chinese description of it, can, according to physics, exist. This record of all possible probabilities, of all thoughts, all constructions, all relations in the universe, is possible. Pretty amazing, huh?
I don't understand the physics behind it. I have a minor grasp as to the physics behind it, but it does answer a number of questions. I do know that the military has done experiments with what they refer to as a psi switch, which they take human DNA, put it on opposite parts of the planet, and affect one DNA strand, and on the other side of the planet, the corresponding DNA strand is affected identically beyond the speed of light. Of course, it takes 1/7, or actually I think it's 1/14 of a second for the light to travel halfway around the planet. And it happens instantaneously beyond a 1/14 of a second at a level that they can't measure. So it basically, for all intents and purposes, it follows your altering the spin of some atomic particles, but on a much larger scale, even
right,
at the level of DNA. But
right.
So I do understand somewhat, but since I am not a physicist, I still have difficulty with the concepts that you're projecting, but I do understand them, and it does make sense that this, obviously, everything in the universe works based on physics. There is no such thing as magic.
Well, the one weakness that we have, the one handicap that we still have because of our instrumental analytical techniques is the unavoidable observation effect. We can't actually watch a particle reverse spin. We have to detect that. And the photons or electrons or electromagnetic radiation that we beam at this particle to detect its spin can have its effect as well. That's what fascinates me so much about this remote viewing, is this really is receive-only observation. You are making an inquiry, but as far as affecting the record itself, we're not doing that. We're just receiving raw information. And if we have the, if we have the alphabet to interpret the symbols that we're being given, whether it's a drawing or a set of coordinates or a temperature, if we have that alphabet, then we can make use of that information as it comes to us.
Yeah. There is something else about the Akashic records that might pertain here.
Okay.
Remote viewing is viewing. But there does seem to be an intermediary. We're not doing it directly.
Uh-huh.
Basically, we're asking, this still goes along the questions of what is the source of the information. We know that there's this recorded history. to even our future is history. However, it is reading it, but I don't believe, based on some of the types of cues you can ask, that we are actually directly reading it. It's as if there's an intermediary, a librarian, as you alluded to. That's a very good analogy. You're literally asking the librarian, and they pull it out and hand it to you. Because sometimes, on rare occasion, you get basically an interjection from the librarian saying, I'm sorry, you're not going to get that book. And those situations are extremely rare. They're so rare, it's almost not pertinent to the conversation right now as to what is the source of the information. But to show you how the Akashic Records, how unbelievably detailed the Akashic Records are, let me give you a target, just a very simple target.
Okay.
And the results of that, and this will be mind-boggling, it was to me. Given a remote viewer, say, go to 10,000 miles above the geocentric center of the red dot on Jupiter on January 1st, 1950, at 12:01, a.m. Pacific Standard Time. Basically, the remote viewer is blind. Tell me, tell me what's there. He'll draw the picture of the planet, draw the picture of the red dot, draw everything. There are no smells, there's no sounds, there's no taste, there's no colors. It's freezing cold of space, no textures. He's floating in space. He's above the planet, right? But there's one more thing he finds. What does he find? There's another life form here, floating in space beside him. And then you say, okay, target the life form. Okay, he describes the life form perfectly. Then you say, track the life form to its source. Who is the life form? And he tracks the life form straight to planet Earth 10 years later, because somebody 10 years later was given that exact cue. In other words, both of their questions went to that point in time in 1950. Even your very thoughts in remote viewing are recorded in the matrix. And even a remote viewer will see another remote viewer's thoughts at that location, at that precise moment in time, if they're given the same cue, even separated by decades. And they can track back the other remote viewer, year, place, time, and where they are, even if it's their future or their past. So even your thoughts, your imagination, is recorded for other people to see. So basically, there is a saying among remote viewers, and it's almost scary to think about. There are no secrets to a remote viewer. Everything and anything can be known, with extremely few exceptions. And that leads me to the next part, and probably the most important part of the source of the information. The source of the information is not only intelligent, but it can do things for you. You can ask it directly to project forward in time all the possibilities of your life and the interactions, for example, with all the other people in your life and all the possible scenarios that could happen beyond anything that we as humans could even imagine. Because we would literally have to be, in essence, God in order to know everything that everybody would think, every possible position everybody would be in, driving their cars down the street, what they're thinking, what they're doing, the law of past, not all the time. All the billions of timelines projected out in the future, our interaction with all those billions of timelines and people, and to literally plot a course through those timelines for an optimum timeline for our life. You can ask a question like that and get an extremely detailed answer as to what is the most optimum perfect timeline for your life based on various scenarios that you choose, and it will create all the interactions and show you the perfect interaction.
So there's like an optimum trajectory for
like
a human life.
Exactly. Now, optimum trajectory doesn't mean it's all going to be roses, happy and roses. It means this is the perfect, best possible scenario that could happen as of this moment forward in time. 2 years later, that optimum trajectory is going to be different. Why? 2 years have passed. A number of doors have already been sealed because fate, moment by moment, The doors have closed due to the passing of time. It's now history to us. So it doesn't mean it's going to be perfect for you, but it means it could not possibly be better if you follow your optimum trajectory versus your personal trajectory. And
now this librarian, would you say that the librarian was angelic in nature?
Actually, that's how I would describe it, because I have no other way of describing it. You know, our lexicon for these sorts of things are so limited. We know there's something that's benevolent, it's outside of time, and it will help us in any possible scenario we ask. And, you know, based on the, you know, our forefathers and religion has already assigned names to these. They called them angels. They called them angelic. They called it a source of knowledge that was from God, basically. So the remote viewers today see no difference in the type and quality and source of information and the manner the information is given as did the ancient forefathers. So since they have already labeled it angelic, who are we to say it's something different?
Right,
we cannot
right.
define what it is. We can just define it in terms of its characteristics. And so saying that the source of information is angelic is perhaps, you know, the best, I guess, best way of describing it.
Of course, if you don't believe in
angels and God, you know what? The source of the information doesn't care, because if you learn remote viewing, you can simply ask whatever questions you want, regardless of your belief. It doesn't matter. You will still get the same answer. It's not tailor-made. The answer doesn't change regardless of your beliefs. If you don't believe the sky is blue and you ask what color the sky is, it'll still tell you it's blue. It doesn't matter what your belief is. So if you don't believe in, you know, God or angels or, you know, any of remote viewing, I challenge you to learn remote viewing, and you will be, you'll change your mind very, very quickly.
Well, we'll talk a little bit about that in the third hour, how we can learn remote viewing, what resources there are for you as a listener, as a purchaser, as an Earth explorer. You mentioned earlier that the government was involved in remote viewing, that they used it as a source of intelligence, and that and remote viewers make the claim that there are no secrets. So I guess one of the natural questions that's going to come out is, what did the government use remote viewing for in military sense?
Well, I do know that the way... I know a little bit about the government and the intelligence community. Not too much. I worked for Hamilton Standard for a while and was instrumental in projects with that were classified and secret military-type projects dealing with fighter jets and nuclear subs. So I understand the intelligence community very, very little. And the intelligence community, as set up by our government, basically will never, ever act on a single source of information. So it's a collection of multiple sources, satellite feeds, you know, on-site reconnaissance, communications picked up through the airwaves, maps, collection of spy information. Remote viewing is just a tool used by the government to confirm or deny other intelligence gathering methods. So the intelligence community uses remote viewing as a collection tool, typically where it is not possible to collect other information regarding a specific event, but they also use that to direct, for instance, satellites. So if the remote viewers say that at this particular latitude and longitude on Earth, we have a facility which stores biological weapons, they will then focus the satellite as a second method of collection on that place, monitor communications to collect more information before they move in. The remote viewing team was given credit for altering the way the United States government does war and collects data, and has been instrumental in basically ridding the Earth of quite a number of biological weapons. They have been given credit for some of the largest drug bust in the country. Yes, remote viewing was used for that as well. You know, FBI
would
throw in some of their requests. And,
what about some of the most wanted people?
I do know that remote viewers were used as well as to track down some of the most wanted people, but, you know, they won't go after people that are outside the United States unless it's a military target. In terms of, we've been asked a number of times, or I have been asked a number of times, why won't remote viewers go after someone like Ben Laden? So
mm-hmm.
I'll just cut to the chase real quick and answer the question.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. As a remote viewer, if you said, if you gave a remote viewer a blind target remote, basically, if you cue it correctly, Osama bin Laden, is he dead or alive? Everyone within 3 minutes will say, we have a person here dressed in a turban, standing in the desert, you know, with a number of people around him. Obviously, he's alive. So people, and they're given it blind, so they have no idea what the question is. So we know bin Laden is blind, that he is alive. A remote viewer could easily be used to zero in on his location, without a doubt. So why doesn't the government go after him? I can't speak for the political, you know, drive of the government. I dare not say my opinion. However, I do know that beyond any doubt, if they wish to know precisely where bin Laden is, you know, and program in a, you know, a missile to those coordinates if they were so inclined to, or send a team to capture him, I don't have any doubt they could do that just in a matter of a few days. To give you an example, a television station in Miami, Florida, gave a remote viewing team about a month and a half ago, about 6 weeks ago, I believe, maybe 2 months ago, they wanted to know where a missing girl was, a 13-year-old missing girl.
Mm-hmm.
The target was the team was broken up into two halves. Both of them were assigned the location of this missing girl, but they didn't even know what the target was. All they knew was that there was an object on Earth, on this planet, find its latitude and longitude within 150 feet, period. That's it. It was a very simple target, but they had no clue as to what the target was. It could be a stolen bomb. It could be an escaped prisoner. They didn't care. Within 4 days, 4 days of solid work, 8 to 12 hour days per team, both teams isolated the exact 150-foot radius, which was a farmhouse in northern part of Oregon, for the location of the person. Then a team was sent out, two people on a team were sent out in order to go to that exact location and gather the ground evidence, which confirmed the girl was there. We knew right from the very beginning she was not alive, but we knew her exact location at that point. So with only 4 days of work to pinpoint a single person on the planet, it is easy to pinpoint anyone that the government desires to know about. So why don't they use this ability to find, say, somebody like Osama bin Laden? Again, I can't answer for them, but maybe he's a figurehead. Maybe if you took out the figurehead, then there would be no reason to continue your agenda, whatever that may be.
Well, as you say, you know, there may be other things, too. They may know the address in Pakistan where he is, but they also know that there really isn't anything we can do about it. And there may be political expediencies as well, which, as you said, we don't want to go into on this program tonight.
Exactly.
That's not our purpose. There are plenty of other programs out there that would love to eat up the airwaves with conspiracy theories. This is not one of them.
Right.
So I'm curious about the source of the knowledge. It doesn't appear to be an individual. It doesn't appear to be some single consciousness in the universe. This appears to be some kind of independent record that is kept, just like the two DNA strands that you talked about, just like the beryllium atoms that we talked about earlier. It seems to be that there is a record that is made, but it is detached from time, and it's difficult for humans to understand this because we are attached to time. This wristwatch that I have on my wrist right now says it's about 20 minutes to 7 Central Standard Time, And that's where I am. But these records seem to have knowledge that's detached from time, past, present, and future, and is probably multidimensional. So once we learn how to remote view, and I encourage, if we have thousands and thousands of people out there learning remote viewing, then perhaps we have some kind of vision of our predicament. Maybe it isn't all what we see with our eyes or what we hear with our ears. Maybe there are things in motion in our universe that we don't know about. You know, we know that the speed of light is constant. We know that the light that we see with our eyes at night coming from the stars is perhaps billions of years old by the time it reaches here, because it's traveling at the speed of light. But if we really want to know what's happening on that star now, real now, not a billion years from now, we need to use remote viewing, because this is where the source of knowledge is instantaneous, between here and there. Do we have a caller on the line?
Yes, Brooks.
We do. Caller, where are you calling from, and what's your first name?
Hi, Brooks.
Yes.
This is Al from New York calling.
Hi, Al.
How you doing? I heard Brett on Kevin Smith's show, and in fact, I called in that evening when he was being interviewed on the Horizon Project. And I have a question or two, if I could ask him.
Of course.
Now, he's mentioned the Akashic Records. The Chinese having this knowledge of being able to, remote view. And I'm wondering if the Atlanteans had the same knowledge, and if they did have it, what good would it have done them?
Well, I've done a little bit of research on that. I don't know what Brent has done, but in our first book, The Ark of Millions of Years, Volume 1, we talked a little bit about that in the chapter, The Lost Civilization of Atlantis. They appeared to have some advanced knowledge that cataclysms were coming, and we believe that remnants of those civilizations did survive. Some of them possibly by going off-planet, and some of them by going to the interior of the planet, and some by just simply traveling to other continents, hence the common origin of a lot of symbolisms that we see in different societies around the planet.
The other thing is
that they had some advanced knowledge that these cataclysms were coming.
Okay. The other thing is, what plans has Brett made now that he is quite sure that this is going to happen in the next few years? What plans has he made for himself and his family to, secure a place of safety?
Actually, that's a very interesting question. Remember, the Akashic Records, or however we want to characterize the source of the information, the librarian, in which case we alluded to as being benevolent and your best friend, helpful to you. It knows the future. It knows all possible futures. So what better source to prepare for your own personal future than to simply ask the librarian, knowing all the possible interactions and outcomes of what's going to happen in the future? So in remote viewing, you could simply say your name / optimum trajectory. In other words, plot out every possibility, every possible future scenario / location. So in other words, where is the most optimum, perfect location considering everything that could happen to me in the future for me to live? And of course, I drag my family along. So I use remote viewing to specifically tailor-make a place for me in the future as to where I would be best suited, you know, having the best people around me, having basically, like I said before, it doesn't mean it's going to be perfect. but it will be the absolute most optimum. I'll literally be the absolute most best taken care of, and I use remote viewing for that. And anybody can learn remote viewing. We will get that to that in the third hour, like Brooks indicated, but I use remote viewing to do a specific optimum trajectory for where I should live.
Can I expand a little bit on that question?
Certainly.
Maybe as it, you know, doesn't directly apply to Brent, but maybe as it applies to all of our listeners, what could we do as individuals if we had knowledge of our optimum trajectory, where we should live, what we should be doing, what we should store to help us survive whatever cataclysm is coming? That is really the most important question. And, you know, that's really the purpose of this whole radio program, X Squared Radio, is to make as much knowledge available to the listeners so that they can make intelligent and maybe even inspired decisions so that they and their families can survive whatever calamity is about to befall us.
Mm-hmm. Can I ask one more question?
Sure.
Okay. Also, I'd like to ask Brett, you're saying these remote viewers can access this library that's out there. If they're looking for certain answers, they write it down. Is that true?
I'm not sure of the question.
How do they... Okay, when they access this library...
Yes.
And they're looking for an answer... do they write something down, or does it come to their mind, or, you know, again, what's the difference between a prophet who can maybe see something in the future and a remote viewer?
Oh, that's a good question.
Yeah, I believe that a prophet per se, say, everybody refers to, say, let's take Edgar Cayce as an example. Edgar Cayce was absolutely amazing, the sleeping prophet. But there were quite a number of prophecies that he made that were way off, that actually didn't come true. The great majority of everything he said was accurate. And that is why he is considered one of the greatest modern prophets. Most of his life was dealt with medicine and healing of people. But the difference between a prophet and a remote viewer, a prophet seems to be able to tap into, and this is my guess. I am not a prophet, and I have no idea. I am an engineer and extremely analytical. A prophet, my guess, would be someone who can tap into the direct source of information and literally funnel it, directly from their subconscious to their conscious awareness and directly state and say what they see. Whereas that is not what a remote viewer is. A remote viewer is anyone, every single person on this planet can tap into this source of information. And the way the information presents itself, I think that might be part of your question.
Well, I think, though, if I may... go back into the Bible, some people might think that there were some prophets that hit things on the mark, or they were 100%. So I probably would think that they had a direct communication with someone that was able to give them a fuller insight.
I've had the difference between prophecies and predictions described to me before, and I know a prophet, I've met one, and I can tell you that prophecies are normally conditional predictions. That is to say, the prophets would say, if the people don't repent, these things are going to happen. And then the people repent, and the bad thing doesn't happen. Because God does exist. And there are forces or information or judgments that go out from him based on conditions that he sets for his people, if they will listen to him, thus the necessity for a prophet. Predictions, on the other hand, are things that are already set in motion. They're already recorded. They're already happening, or they've already happened. And it is maybe this information that remote viewers can tap into. I don't think Brent is saying that remote viewers can tap into the mind of God. No, they're tapping into a record of events that have already occurred.
Okay.
That's correct. I did not mean to imply that at all, and I hope that I didn't suggest that. But, you know, to the information that we are tapping into, or remote viewers tap into, is history to the source. Brooks, you mentioned multiple dimensions.
Uh-huh.
We do know that, for example, if the source of the information is outside of time, which every remote viewer, knows intimately, because you can get answers about future events as easily and as quickly and as accurately as past events. If we're living in three dimensions and we are moving through the fourth dimension, time, if the source of the information, the knowledge, is outside of time, then it clearly is beyond the fourth dimension of time, if we're calling
sure.
the fourth dimension time.
Sure.
So whether that's the fifth dimension, I don't know. But clearly, you know, we are tapping into something that has already happened as far as its perspective.
Well, I know you said that we live in three dimensions. Actually, we perceive three dimensions, but we are multidimensional beings. We just do not, unless we're adept at remote viewing or other skills like that, we're not aware of the other dimensions in which we exist.
Yeah, in order to tap in, most remote viewers will say that they believe that in order to, quote, tap in to a source of information that is, say, fifth dimensional, that part of us must be fifth dimensional.
Right.
So that is, I'm not a physicist, but, you know, it does appear that we are well beyond, you know, the sum of our parts.
We're going to have a program on dimensions. So that people can tune into that, and we'll make it as lay as we possibly can, so that people can understand how all these dimensions exist, what their names are, how to negotiate them, at least in thought, and in physics we're doing our best to detect them, but mathematically we have described them quite well, and I'll try my best to take it from that theoretical point and. And we'll have a guest on, and we'll talk about multiple dimensions, and not just us being multiple dimensional beings, but also our planet and our universe.
Brooks?
Yes.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes, please.
Okay. If we took an hourglass filled with sand, and naturally we're looking at the neck of it, or the middle between the upper and the lower part of that hourglass, as we see the sand coming down, where would and at the neck, humanity is. That's where humanity is right now. In that neck, do you believe that the different dimensions lie there, where we are at this time, or are they either below or above?
Well, let me tell you what the common belief is. The common belief is that dimensions exist in a membrane form. Actually, in physics, we call them brains. And they actually could be quite thin. As thin as a tenth of a millimeter. That's about as small as we can detect a gravitational field. The answer is that they exist all through, not just in the wide part of the hourglass at the bottom and the top, but also in the neck in the center. And it is possible for intelligences to move between these dimensions. However, not pertaining to physics, I believe that there are conditions for this movement. Beings can move from upper dimensions, or dimensions with higher vibrational requirements, to lower ones at will, or when they're directed to do that. Or they can be cast from upper ones into lower ones. But beings in lower vibrational dimensions, let's say the one we're in right now, we cannot just raise ourselves and then walk into heaven, which we assume is a higher vibrational dimension than the one we're in. We have to be qualified to do that. We have to be, the scriptures call it transfigured, which is a temporary change in the matter of a human being so that they can withstand the glory of that higher vibrational dimension. And then when we're returned, of course, you know, we're exhausted and it could take 2 or 3 days to recover from it. People that have out-of-body experiences come close to this as they go down these tunnels toward light, but they can't actually walk into the light because they can't raise their own vibrational level. This is something you can't do on your own. You can go laterally, you can go down, but you can't go up, is basically what I have learned.
Well, I want to thank you for giving me the opportunity to ask my questions on the air, and thank you, Brett. And again, thank you, Brooks.
Oh, my
and,
pleasure.
I'll be listening.
Listening up in New York, and please stay tuned.
Okay.
Good night. All right. Well, that was good. We had a caller in from New York, and of course, now the lines are open. You can call back in and fill the lines right back up again. 877-876-5227 as we approach the end of our second hour. We've been talking about the Akashic Records, multiple, I don't know how I got multiple dimensions into that. I'm sorry, Brent, but a little bit of explanation there. And the fact that the records are an independent library that we can access as individuals, whether we're qualified or whether we're not, as long as we have the skill set. And that's what we're going to talk about in the next hour is the skill set called remote viewing. How do you master the protocol? What are the sources? Who are the teachers? How did the knowledge of how to do this disappear in the first place? And how long has it taken us to painstakingly put these pieces back together? I did want to ask you just as an aside, Brent, I know you're in Las Vegas tonight, and I know that yesterday you asked me to you asked me to give you some advice about 5 minutes before you got married. And by the way, I want to offer you my congratulations on adding your better half to your last name.
I appreciate it. Thank you. And if I can tell, reiterate what I asked you. You know, you just called me out of the blue 5 minutes before, and I said, please, if you're my friend, talk me out of it.
And, of course, I wouldn't do that because I'm your friend. And I know you made a great choice.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
And I'm not going to ask you if you used remote viewing to find your wife, but I think you knew her a long, long time, and that takes a long time to learn somebody. And
quite a number of years. Yeah, we've been together for about 4 years, so it was about time. And we're both very happy.
Well, that's what it's all about, happiness. That's what it's all about, becoming a team and having that happiness. Well, again, my guest tonight is Brent Miller. You're free to call in if you wish. We are going to take about 6.5 minutes of commercial break right now, and we will be back for our third hour right after I turn this knob, right after these messages. We appreciate you tuning in. This is Brooks Agnew with X Squared Radio. Did you know that 11 of the 12 sets of footprints on the moon were made by Eagle Scouts? It's true. Soon, men and women will be doing the real moonwalk. But just so we don't forget, the first footprint on the moon has been replicated in a limited edition plaque that would make the perfect gift for a court of honor. Maybe you need something special for your office or your library at home. This high-quality plaque can add that something special that lets people know how excited you are. We are returning to the moon. Visit Countdown Creations at X Squared Radio today and order your limited edition First Step on the Moon plaque. Have you ever thought about owning a telescope? I mean a really good telescope. Well, at the Discovery Store, you can find the world's best telescopes at great discounts and free shipping. They've come a long way, you know. Most of the comets discovered in the last 50 years were found by amateurs. There is no better way to view the sun than with a coronoscope. Trust me, you will be captivated if you ever get to watch the sun through one of these units. Who knows? You might just save the planet. So plan a trip to the Discovery Store at X Squared Radio.
You know, thus is the place where the past meets the future. If you have done your genealogy and found that you have roots in the Irish or Scottish clans, then don't you think it would be a great idea to have a replica of your family crest? You can get a coat of arms, a ring, or even a family tartan that may help you or your grandchildren remember your ancestors. This is the time when the hearts of the children are turned to the hearts of the fathers. We only carry the best. So if you're ready to experience the glory of your past, you're ready to visit Scottish Heirloom at X Squared Radio.
People are always looking for something inexpensive and unique to give people they love. Well, now there is a way to give a gift that not only says how long you will love them, but it also allows you to help keep the planet green and growing. Tree Givers at X Squared Radio is the company that will plant a tree on public land somewhere in the 50 states and provide your special person with a beautiful certificate of that place. This has become one of the most popular gift sites in the world. And because of their love for the Earth, they are changing the world. So visit Tree Givers at X Squared Radio and see if you can find a gift for your special person. Space shuttle fleet is very soon going to be retired. No other spacecraft in history has advanced the world more than this fleet. I wanted a way to keep that memory alive in my home, so I went to the space store and ordered a 25-inch model of the Space Orbiter. People who have seen it always comment on the incredible attention to detail in this model. If you know someone who loves the space program, and you want to get them a gift that they will never forget, you should visit the Space Store at X Squared Radio. Brooks Agnew here with X Squared Radio. If you like wildlife art and would love to add some of the most beautiful replicas to your home or office, you should visit Wildlife Gifts at X Squared Radio. They have everything from pandas, fish, to eagles, to horses, in all sizes and price ranges. No matter what animal you love, they have the art for you. So visit Wildlife Gifts at X Squared Radio for that special someone today.
Thank you.
Welcome back to X Squared Radio. I'm your host, Brooke Bagnell. Our very excellent guest tonight is Brent Miller. And we're talking about remote viewing. We're talking about the Akashic Records. We've even thrown in multiple dimensions. And we can talk a little bit about that if you like. Our number, if you want to call in this hour, is 877-876-5227 anywhere in North America. And you can make your thoughts known, and you can have your effect on the universe. Okay, this is the third hour, and I also want to let our AM affiliates know that if you are just carrying this hour, there were 2 hours previous to this, and your listeners would love to hear all 3 hours of that. And if you're tuning in just this hour, you can, of course, access the archives in a couple of days by going to either bbsradio.com and accessing the archives, or you can go to x2-radio.com and listen to the archives. And we have gone through the extra expense and technology to bring this to you via podcasting. So if you've got an iPod, you can download this in that format and listen to the program as well, anywhere you want to go. Many people listen while they're at work during the day. Not that we would tell their employers that they're doing such a thing, but of course, if they're listening to X Squared Radio, they are more productive, so we want you to listen. This hour, we're going to talk about how you can gain the skill of remote viewing. I know you're interested in it. You've been tuned in for the last couple of hours and listened to some examples of that. I, too, am interested in this, and I will be a student along with you. So, Brent, can you tell us, first of all, where do we go to find the information of how to remote view?
Remote viewing, it started out being taught in the classrooms. In order to, over thousands of students being taught, we found that over years, the best possible way to teach a newcomer the remote viewing protocol. It's a step-by-step process, not explaining exactly what we're doing, but just simply following a list of protocols, kind of like learning how to type. And it has been actually documented extremely well and put into an incredibly powerful course called LearnRV.com. And it's at the website www.learnrv.com. And there is a form there of students, remote viewing students, thousands of them to talk to with thousands of questions and answers, and it is manned by professional remote viewers to help you with every step of your learning. The 4-disc DVD course is broken up into numerous chapters per DVD, having you walk through the various protocols. You learn it in your own home at your own pace, learning the remote viewing protocols along with the other students on the DVD. As you're given blind targets and you do the remote viewing protocol, you obtain the answer and then you obtain the feedback from the remote viewing protocol from the DVD, and it builds, each target builds on information, your subconscious mind, because that's what's being taught. Your subconscious mind is how to percolate data from unconscious awareness to conscious awareness of your cueing. So the best remote viewing training available today is at learnrv.com, and it's a 4-disc DVD course, and it is absolutely phenomenal. And I encourage everybody to go to the site and check it out, look at the testimonials, actually sign up for the forum, look at the students, how they give each other targets back and forth on the blind, and the amazing results even beginning one day students come up with almost immediately. Anybody can learn this, like I said, from a 10-year-old child to an 80-year-old adult. All it takes is the willingness to learn remote viewing and the ability to follow simple directions, and that's it.
Well, that sounds easy enough. I can't wait to get my set, and I'm going to get started as soon as I can. My pace is a little bit different than most people's paces because I try to get as much done as I possibly can in as short amount of time as I can. Tell us a little bit about Ed Dames. You've mentioned his name a few times during the program. Who is he? How did he gain his skill? You know, what does he do now?
Well, Major Dames had basically an extremely high level of military intelligence. He actually dropped from celestial levels of intelligence, if I may say that tongue-in-cheek, to join the remote viewing team, the remote viewing protocol. Because if your heart and soul is in intelligence, what better team to join than a team that can acquire direct knowledge, which is always accurate, always on target. And so it caught his eye way back in the early 80s, and he is the one and only training military intelligence training officer for the remote viewing team, starting with the Stargate program and advancing through the various stages while it was in the military top secret unit. Not to say there isn't one right there today. I'm sure there is one. But he brought it out into the real world to teach civilians. And he is by far the most decorated military intelligence officer in recent history. He has 2 meritorious service medals, which you can actually see and read at learnrv.com, and he has a Legion of Merit. And if you actually read the actual honors he was given from Congress, you'll see, you know, the extent to his role in the United States government and in the intelligence community that he played a part in. So we're talking to, you know, he developed the protocol. He did not develop the protocol. The protocol was developed when he joined, but it was in its infancy. He enhanced the protocol, you know, tenfold, and has been instrumental over the last 20 years in advancing the protocol to an incredibly powerful tool using all the latest techniques that have been come up with since he left the military about 10 to 15 years ago. And all of that is in the 4-disc DVD course. As the fastest I believe anybody could go through it, like yourself, Brooks, who is super sharp, absorbs everything very quickly, it is a skill. And like any other skill, you could probably do a DVD a day, but
wow,
you need about a week to practice between each DVD. So you're looking at about a month to become literally a phenomenal remote viewer. And then from that point on, it's a matter of practicing, sharing with other remote viewers, and targeting each other.
There are actually live workshops that you can participate in once you buy the course and get involved and begin to hone your skills. There are workshops that will help you get better, right?
Right. There's actually a workshop. Major Ed Dames is giving a workshop in September in Las Vegas, for which is a crash course. It teaches you the first 2 discs of the course in 2 days. And there's an advanced course which teaches you the last 2 discs of the 4-disc DVD course in October, again in Las Vegas. Personally, I learn by, the course is so well done on the DVD course. Anyone can learn it from the DVD course alone. But, you know, it is, there's something needed in the added dimension sometimes that you can ask a direct question and answers of a professor. Ed in this case, he's not a professor, but a teacher while you're learning in a classroom environment. So combining both of them will, you know, accelerate your skill, you know, very quickly.
You know,
yes,
and looking back,
these courses,
looking back all the way to January of 2003, you've been having these workshops, and one after the other, sold out, sold out, sold out. You're talking about thousands of people that have learned this skill of remote viewing, right?
Right. Anybody can learn this. Actually, let me back off. There's a small group of people that cannot. Habitual drug users cannot learn it. Their minds cannot focus long enough in order to follow the protocol.
Mm-hmm.
There's another set of people, and I say this almost jokingly, but I'm serious about it. If you're a, quote, rebellious teenager, you know, all of us adults who have had children, we know what that means. You know, somewhere between the ages of, say, 17 and 20. It varies per child. But if you're in that age range, you can't learn it either because their minds refuse to follow directions. Anybody who basically follows directions, you know, a 10-year-old girl, you know, piece of cake, 25-year-old, you know, anyone can learn it other than those 2 exceptions. And it is amazing. Anybody can learn this. And the reason why a lot of these places are sold out, this is a serious teaching environment. You are sit at a desk with only two people at most with you on that desk. Long table, and it's a classroom environment. So there is a limited number of people that can be in that classroom. And that is why they sell out. It is not an auditorium where we let in hundreds and it's a lecture. That wouldn't teach anybody anything. You actually sit down there, all the materials are handed to you, and you start right from the beginning. It's a no-fluff, no-nonsense course, and you actually start out teaching and learning the remote viewing protocol step by step. And by the end of the second day, you're absolutely amazed and blown away at your own abilities. You walk out of there being a remote viewer, a beginning remote viewer, but nevertheless a remote viewer. And I don't know, every person who comes, even those who... Everybody who comes wants to learn remote viewing, but I can tell you for certainty, Brooks, everyone is a skeptic. I am a skeptic because it contradicts everything we have learned to believe in the Western world and the way we live today. But by the end of the first day, you are not only remote viewing, but you are nailing each of the targets, and you walk out of there just in total disbelief that we live in this world, in this sea of information, and that nobody before has ever taught us how to tap into it. And I believe that this will become so commonplace that, like the ancient civilizations, it will be a natural thing. And most people will start to learn it and learn it at a very young age. And it will change the way our society lives and functions on a more spiritual level than on a superficial, you know, possession, worldly kind of level.
Well, that, I think, is a good thing. Do you have any kind of testimonials of people that have learned RV, learned remote viewing? What did they do with it? I mean, did they just run out and win the lottery, or?
The remote viewing is, you can learn, this is very difficult for most people to grasp, because we do live in this. We are conditioned in life to live from day to day. So people think in a very narrow-minded sense. Here they have a tool that when you learn remote viewing, and everybody learns it who tries, you can ask anything, and I mean anything, but that doesn't seem to sink in. So people use it on very superficial things. Oh, my friend lost his car keys. Okay, I'll remote view the car keys. Oh, they're hidden in the corner behind the bookshelf. You know, they must have dropped down behind a book. There it is. So he goes, oh, thanks. You know, they tend to think in more what I refer to as parlor tricks. They're not tricks at all. You're using remote viewing and you're giving them the exact answer, and sure enough, you're right every time. But finding cats and dogs, finding car keys, finding this and that. Some people will go as far as to say, maybe I can use this to make money. All right. To give you an example on how to make money. One very simple cue. Your name / Dow Jones Industrial Average / most significant short-term profit / company's most significant most recognizable product. Right? We all know there's only 30-some companies we're talking about.
Right.
Which of those companies will have the greatest short-term gain? And for that particular company, what is the recognizable product that they make? So I do my remote viewing session, and I come up with a little thermostat on the wall, a digital thermostat. Guess what? It's Honeywell. So I put all my money in Honeywell. Why all my money? Because the cue just said that that company has the most advanced, is the shortest gain. And I do that cue every single morning. And I will always get the same answer, the thermostat on the wall, until the answer changes. All of a sudden, it's not that. It's gasoline being poured in to a car. Okay, I pulled it all out of Honeywell and put it into, say, Exxon, which is one of the other 30 companies, I believe. Then I keep doing that same cue. So basically, I not only don't lose money, but my cash flow income just accelerates through the roof. People have done that. I know one young man who decided to have, he didn't just say Dow Jones Industrial 30s, he left it ended open. Maximum short-term gain, and he got Canadian wheat fields. It took him 2 or 3 days to figure out what type of wheat, and he put all of his money in futures options for wheat. Within 2 weeks, there was a flash freeze. This was 2 years ago. Flash freeze in Canada destroyed most of the wheat crop. The price went through the roof. In 2 weeks, he made, you know, a lot. You know, more money than I'll probably make in my life. But, you know, this is what people have done with it. And, yes, people have used it in order to win the lottery. Numbers are extremely complicated in remote viewing. There's a mother-daughter and team who have taken the LearnRV.com course, who used it to win the Texas Daily 3 lottery several times. After their second time, they published the protocols that they used for remote viewers, so other remote viewers could learn to win the lottery as well. And this is the Daily 3 lottery we're talking about. And we have testimonials from all over the country of remote viewers winning lotteries in almost every state that has a Daily 3 lottery. And sending us the pictures of the tickets. Now, I don't consider this to be very important use of remote viewing. Like I said, we live in a Western society. We think short term. Here you have a tool to answer any question you could ever want. And people are using it to make money, find car keys. Well, if you really step back and think about it, what I am suggesting you use it for is your life. Taking care of your loved ones, knowing what the future should bring. Like the caller from New York asked, you know, what plans are you taking? What steps are you taking? Using it to direct where you should be the safest with your family, which will have the freshest and nicest water supply, the friendliest neighbors, a plan for a vocation for you in the future where you'll be the happiest you could be. And believe me, it'll probably be 10 times happier than you are now, because we are mostly where we are now because we've kind of been pushed into that area based on circumstances in our past, you know, throughout our life. Mm-hmm. And it's not really where we want to be. Well, remote viewing helps you where you want to be. Let me give you one example of a really good cue. One man came up to me and said, look, my wife doesn't know what to do. She just sits at home all day and she has no clue as to what to do. And she's not happy. So what job should she have? I said, well, we'll ask, quote, the librarian, the source of the information, basically create all the possible future timelines for her and tell us what is the optimum career for her. The session took 20 minutes, and it produced a drawing of a machine I've never seen before. I have no clue as to what this machine is.
A machine?
A machine. It looked totally archaic to me. So I show it to him, and I say, well, here's the answer. I have no clue as to what this is. So he faxes it to her. You know, 10 minutes later, she calls on the phone. She says, I know exactly what that is. That is a hat felt pressing machine. It's only available in England, you know. And from a little child, I've always wanted to do that, but I forgot. That's been so many decades ago, I had no clue, you know, that I had even remembered I wanted to do that. So that was her quote. It would make her personally the happiest in life, considering money, job satisfaction, career, where she would go, the whole bit, to have that machine. Without questioning anything, they went, you know, they found a place in London that sold the machine. They got the machine. She made a career out of it. And they're just, whereas they may not be rich, they're making more than enough money hand over fist, you know, to be happy. She sets her own hours, and it gives her incredible satisfaction in life. But that was the question. What is the most optimum job? In other words, optimum is there won't be any other job on earth that could make her happier. And it's a personal choice for everybody. Use remote viewing for that. For your life. And I'll give you another sad, and this is a very sad example, but it shows you the true power of remote viewing and how the source is benevolent and really trying to help.
Mm-hmm.
One gentleman said, optimum trajectory, left it open-ended. What name/optimum trajectory? What should I do in life? And the answer was a ship sailing out to sea. And all you saw was the back end of the ship sailing. I shouldn't say saw, but the data that was collected, you know, compiled to be a ship leaving port going out to sea. We found out later that particular view was significant, but at the time we didn't. Gave the information to the gentleman, and he said, you know what, I've always, very young man, like I like to think myself is mid-40s, and he always wanted to go on an ocean cruise. Always. His whole dream was to go take him and his wife and his family on an ocean cruise. I said, well, that seems to be your optimum trajectory. And he says, well, that's just nonsense. That's stupid. Threw the thing away. 6 months later, he was dead. He died of a massive coronary. The reason the source of the information gave him that knew the future, knew what was going to happen. There was nothing left else for him to do other than take a cruise. It knew his reaction to every possible scenario. Because, for example, if the source of information, I will go out on a limb here, remember the source of the information projected out every conceivable timeline.
Right.
You're saying, so why didn't the source of the information warn him about the heart attack? Because it knew that he would throw it away in the trash, just like everything else. So it resorted down to, okay, since there's nothing I can do to save your life, I give you the only thing left. Enjoy the last 6 months of your life.
Right.
He even refused to do that. Now, we're creating a paradox here. Should he have been receptive to taking medicine or going to a doctor or having a certain surgical procedure that would have corrected his heart attack, I am certain the source of the information would have given him that, because after all, the cue was optimal trajectory. Go see this doctor now so that, you know, they can fix you. But he wasn't receptive to that, so it's giving him the best possible scenario that he would accept, and he didn't even accept that. So there was no choice.
I've had listeners, in fact, my co-author brought this question up as well. People have told me that remote viewing can go up to but not past the year 2012, that there's some kind of viewing block that happens. People can't see past that point. Is there any truth to that?
Actually, no, there is no truth to that. I can tell you what truth there is to that and what there is not truth. There are two things that remote viewers have very difficult time with is chronological time and numbers. Both are solvable, just like the daily lottery. Those are specific numbers.
Mm-hmm.
But it takes a tremendous amount of practice and dedication, focus on the protocol to zero in on actual numbers and chronological date. For example, to give you one, before I answer your question, categorically about the 2012, to give you one example to show how remote viewing can be used to generate the most complicated of scenarios. A year and a half ago, Major Ed Dames was on the Art Bell Show, January 1st, in fact. And he was asked a question. The question was, what is the next major catastrophe on Earth? Remember, this was 4 days after the level 9 earthquake in Indonesia.
Right.
And I believe I did mention this on the Kevin Smith Show as well. And his answer was, because he knew that Art Bell likes to ask those kind of questions, so he kind of figured that Art would ask that question. But he used remote viewing ahead of time to determine the answer, and if it was asked, he'd give it. Well, the answer was, in March, just 3 months from now, the Indonesia area would suffer another level 9 earthquake, which shows chronological time, numbers, level 9, and precise location on Earth, latitude and longitude area. Just as predicted, March 27th, another level 9 earthquake in the Indonesia area happened, which is contradictory to all of modern science dealing with geophysics. Because once you release the stress on a plate, it takes hundreds of years to build back up again, especially to a level 9. But you don't question the remote viewing data. The source of the information doesn't lie. So he just states what it is. Sure enough, it happens. Now, the question is this. In 2012, there is a problem with going beyond 2012 using our Gregorian calendar, which is based on 365 days. You don't have any trouble looking at events, per se, after 2012, but trying to lock them in onto the Gregorian calendar is difficult, if not impossible, suggesting that the calendar itself, by necessity, alters or changes. Perhaps the spin of the Earth changes, it tilts, the seasons change, it speeds up. We no longer have 365 days, but we have 360 days, which is the suggestion that many remote viewers have come up with. So some event causes a cataclysmic change. And I'm not saying it's in the year 2012, but it's within years plus or minus that date. So there is a period of time or a point in time that comes where calendars seem to suddenly shift beyond the Gregorian calendar that we now use. And
that makes perfect sense.
That's what people are referring to. So remote viewers can see beyond that, but they can't lock in on a Gregorian date.
I see. I heard a click. Do we have a caller on the line? Nope. Okay. But I do want to let you know that you can call in 877-876-5227 from anywhere in North America. All right, this last half hour, what I'd like to explore a little bit, the year 2012 is very interesting to many people. In fact, it's the subject of our second book, our second volume of The Ark of Millions of Years, and it's probably going to be the subject of many movies that are coming out. I think Mel Gibson just released a movie called Apocalypto, and he was actually filming that in secret in South America and Mexico. I'm going to be curious to see that movie. I don't really know what it's about, but I think it's about the 2012 events. I know that these events have been remote viewed, but I don't know what the results are. Nobody's been publishing anything. I would like to ask you, pursuant to the Horizon Project, particularly, when people started remote viewing optimum trajectories for people, did they sort of stumble into a set of cataclysms that might be coming forward, or at least some indication that some cataclysms are going to happen? And how did that happen?
That's an interesting question, and that goes toward showing evidence of an upcoming and approaching cataclysm based on a short-term timeline.
Mm-hmm.
Since the word optimum, we never know if a term is going to be useful to the Matrix, because we don't know how our modern-day lexicon, how the Matrix utilizes it. For instance, the word terrorist doesn't make much sense to the Matrix, because it has, since the source is outside of time, and if you look at a word throughout thousands of years, well, the word terrorist doesn't make sense throughout thousands of years. You know, one man's terrorist is another man's freedom fighter, sort of. You know, you have to get much more specific than that.
Oh, I understand.
So the lexicon, but we do know that after using the term optimum, that it does, in fact, have a direct optimum meaning, as we call it today, throughout the thousands of years. So, you know, they have used that term optimum for a long time, and the military remote viewing people have used it since Ed Dames and other remote viewers have been using it outside the military about 15 years now. Everybody has been asking, what is my optimum trajectory, what is my optimum mate, what is my optimum location, my vocation, my health. You can use it for anything. My grandmother is sick, what is the optimum currently available treatment / cure for her? You know, you'll get the cure first. If there's no cure, you'll get the treatment. So optimum is used by quite a number of people for different instances. And it's this word optimum which brings us to the answer of your question.
Uh-huh.
Many people have wanted to know, what is my optimum location? It gives them always a location. You know, 20 years ago, they had a beautiful home out in the country. They had a ski resort. And they said, yeah, we just bought a piece of land over there 2 months ago. Well, that's your option. You know, it knows based on everything you're capable of doing and where your mindsets are, that's your optimum, you know, location, sanctuary. By the way, optimum sanctuary is the cue for people to use to find out, who learn remote viewing, to find out where you should be, you know, when all this hits. Because you have to be there before it happens. If you try to go there after it starts to happen, you're never going to make it there.
You're going to be like all the cars trying to leave when Katrina hit.
Traffic jam. You'll never get there. And people would ask, what is my optimum vocation? Now, a vocation is a career. It's a lifelong thing. You need training for it. So over the last 15 years ago, on extremely rare occasion, people would get something really, really weird. And I'm not going to tell you quite what it is yet. I'll tell you in a few minutes. They would get something strange. 99% of the people would get a perfect career for them. And it was great. Oh, I know exactly what I need to do. I go to college, I do this, and I switch over to this profession. 10 years ago, maybe 1 out of 20 got this same exact weird thing. And everybody else got their optimum careers. 5 years ago, now we're talking about 20% of the population who gets an optimum trajectory. for vocation, they get this same weird anomaly. Everybody is given the same thing. And the other 80% are given a career. Now, in the last few years, it has segregated very, very quickly. If you give an optimum vocation career to a young man going into college, every single one, 100%, get this weird item. Every single
really?
One, 100% get this weird item. But if you give it to people who are already out of college, who already have a career, then 30% get this weird item, and 70% get, well, you can make this minor tweak change to your career. So basically, we're looking at something that's getting closer and closer and closer. And because you're talking to somebody who is going into college, and they're getting this weird anomaly, which I'll tell you in about 10 seconds, it means that they don't have time to make it through college and create a career, that this thing, whatever is coming, is going to come before they have time to get a career. My guess, based on 4 years of college and a couple years to create a career, is coming within 6 years, and it's getting closer and closer. This thing that people are getting is an underground bunker. They are getting a home underground. It's trying to warn them. It's saying, you don't have enough time for a career. You need to focus on something else.
Wow.
And that is an anomaly. It is showing us that something is coming, and it's coming quickly. And so 20 years ago, nobody got this because it's too far. You still had time to create a career. Now that it's so close, people going into college, they're all told, basically, sorry, you don't have a career, and you never will. Because if they would have a career after this event, they would get that career. The matrix doesn't lie. But they don't get a career. They get this. It's basically saying, sorry, buddy, no career for you.
Are we getting any kind of clear picture as to the nature of the coming cataclysm?
We do know that it's going to be global in nature. We do know that continents will shift, meaning some will rise above the ocean, some will sink into the ocean. I don't mean entire continents, but portions of continents.
Mm-hmm.
We do know that there will be high winds hitting the ground, 300 miles an hour. The only way we can fathom high winds hitting the ground is the Gulf Stream, which is flying at, 300, 400 miles an hour way up in the atmosphere to literally come down and touch the deck, basically. None of our modern buildings can withstand, a 300-mile-an-hour wind. It would just flatten everything instantly that it touched.
There have been 300-mile-an-hour winds on this planet before, and things have not survived it.
No, that would be very tough. You might have fragments of metal sticking up, but there won't be intact buildings. We also know that there will be events that will cause plasma bursts that come from the sun that follow electrically charged paths that are created by other things that move from the sun and hit the earth, searing all, basically searing the ground and searing everything in its path.
I know we have a magnetosphere, and it does protect us against, each week when we begin X Squared Radio, I always tell people what the solar wind is. Tonight it was 377.8 kilometers per second. Occasionally it gets up close to 1,000 kilometers per second, and we have an aurora borealis, or we have charged oxygen particles pouring off the leeward side of the planet. But toward 2012, the Earth will align itself with the rift in the Milky Way, which is said to hold a massive spinning black hole.
Mm-hmm.
And the Sun will be on the other side of Earth. And so a gravitationally enhanced solar flare could, instead of going 100 to 300 diameters of the Earth out into space, maybe it could go 10,000 or 50,000 diameters of Earth out into space and have devastating effects, at least from a cosmic radiation standpoint, on the surface. Now, when we have an X-class flare, and we have had them, last October there were 9 in 1 month. We don't fly over the poles. We change the course of our jetliners because we don't want to expose our pilots or our passengers to that kind of cosmic radiation. But these are events that have already happened and can happen on an ordinary basis on Earth. You're talking about something extraordinary.
Yeah, I'm talking about literally plasma. Plasma energy, which is a fourth form of matter, literally leaving the sun and landing on the surface of the earth. Literally frying everything it touches. Not in the form of like gamma radiation or X-ray radiation, but literally sheets of plasma.
Wow.
Frying the planet and everything under it.
Landing on the surface of the earth.
And we're not talking about the entire...
Do we have a caller on the line?
Like gamma radiation.
I heard some feedback. I don't know if we have a caller
yes.
on the line. We do?
Yes.
Okay, caller, what's your first name and where
are you
calling
from? It's Gail from Tennessee.
Oh, hi.
How are you doing?
Wonderful.
I'm really enjoying this. I've enjoyed the whole show, but especially now because this is kind of a subject that I'm following very closely as far as there are so many things starting to pop up in remote viewing, government activity and things. Were you gentlemen aware of the fact that the whole government structure starting January 2009, if in fact that date is not moved up even sooner, because it's already been bumped up once, are all going to start evacuating all essential personnel off of the coastal areas, meaning Washington, D.C. and things inland?
I wasn't aware of that.
Yes.
I wasn't aware of that either. I've heard no plans to that effect.
Mm-hmm. This comes from a very reliable source.
Wow.
And a lot of your...
Now it's on X-Squared Radio.
Pardon?
I said, now it's on X-Squared Radio.
That's right. Yeah,
you know,
so
it would just... somebody asked me a question the other day. How could, say, 30% of the population of the United States be wiped out in a weekend? And, of course, I answered instantly saying, well, you know, it wouldn't take but a tidal wave or a tsunami
Correct.
Of 300 or 400 feet, and you'd take out the coastal areas, and in about 5 hours, that would be it.
Well, in reality, 90% of the population of the planet lives around coastal areas.
Yep, within 20 miles of a coast, and that
That's
includes
right.
major rivers.
90% of the population of the planet. That's a lot of people. They could be wiped away. Well, I think we had a good demonstration of it with the... In the tsunamis and a quake over there in the Indonesian region.
Oh, and that was a small one.
That's
so
right.
By comparison, that was just a small ripple.
Yes, there have been tsunamis on this planet over 1,500 feet high.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. So I'm curious, though. If the government, all non-essential or all essential personnel being evacuated from coastal areas, how are they going to... how are they going to control the movement of people once this gets out?
Well, see, they have what they call these, they call them cleanup zones or something, and they've been diverting billions of dollars to those areas to build housing, the dome homes and stuff,
mm-hmm.
for their personnel and families.
Mm.
And a lot of the retired old Navy sub people have been in lots of briefings and have already seen the maps of what even the United States will look like. I can't say what the rest of the planet, but I've been told that map of Gordon Michael Scallion's comes darn close to the map that the government's working off of. I have a copy of the map right here in front of me.
Wow. Well, I'm not much into conspiracy theories, and I didn't see Al Gore's movie, but I am an Earth explorer, and this does seem to fit the protocol,
yes.
at least the mindset that we're talking about tonight.
You know, the Blue Ridge Parkway? They said that everything will be underwater east of the Blue Ridge Parkway. All of Florida, half of Georgia, Alabama, the Virginias, they're pretty much gone.
So coastal property
Texas.
On the western part of North Carolina might be possible.
Yes. And, of course, you know all of the lakes up there, Superior and all in through there, will all actually become an inland ocean. Now, it takes some drastic earth changes for all that to transpire.
It would take some drastic changes. Now, we were talking about this plasma jet that's coming from the sun that's gonna sear anything in its path. Is that going to
mm-hmm.
be like the whole sunshine side of the Earth is facing the sun at the time of that flare, or is it just going to glance off the side of Earth, or do we have any information on that, Brent?
Well, the viewers that have looked at that show that it's going to be small bursts of plasma hitting the Earth. It's not going to sear the entire planet like a rotisserie, but it will happen over a period of days, though. And
did you say days?
As the Earth rotates, it'll hit pretty much, you know, various sections on each continent. So there's not going to be, you know, any one particular continent that will be saved from the effects of the sun.
And are you saying that some of the viewing that you've done or that has been done for people and by people indicate that a bunker might be a way to survive this kind of plasma?
Yeah, remember when I told you before that no remote viewing answer is given without the answer plus context?
Right.
Well, the context in this case, the answer is, for instance, this young man who's entering college, what is his optimum career? The answer is, sorry, buddy, you're not getting a career, but you should be underground in a bunker. And by the way, the context is, here's an incredible intense heat coming and high winds. It gives the reason why. It gives the context, too, why you should be in the bunker. And that same context is apparent in all of the sessions that have this anomalous answer.
Our Tennessee caller, do you have any information relative to this high heat and high winds, or just the
flooding, water?
Just water.
Water, rising water, tsunamis.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have a stretch zone out there in the Atlantic, which is certainly in lots of volcanic activity out there too.
Well, I've been watching the seismic activity every day for the last month. Well, I know in the month of June, there were 617 earthquakes over a magnitude of 4 from San Francisco all the way around to the islands. And we're talking about going up over Alaska, down all the way to the Aleutians, like a big semicircle.
Significant increase over what was considered
the
norms.
And the interesting thing is, the last 5 days, there have been no earthquakes on the west coast of the U.S. None.
Maybe the calm before the storm?
I don't know. I just like to look at patterns. You know, I have a degree in statistics, and when things fall out or have a special cause, we try to find the root cause of that. And I don't know if the root cause can be found, but certainly it's an anomaly.
In this remote viewing that you see where it's, you know, showing people being their most safest chance is underground in, like, bunkers, for lack of a better description.
Mm-hmm.
Can any of the remote viewers get a handle on when they see these things starting to be a necessity for survival?
Yeah, that's a good question.
The sessions that I'm familiar with regard to the specific where is the vocation, based on the number of people who are getting it in terms of where they are in life, entering college, outside of college, the only information derived from that is that it's going to be in the next few years. That's with respect to the underground bunkers. With respect to the viewing of the actual events, there's a very serious chronological event sequence that happens. And in fact, the remote viewers report the almost an identical sequence of chronological events that happens as recorded already by, you know, some ancient texts.
Mm-hmm.
And I am not a physicist or a geologist, but I have been told by physicists and geologists, based on the sequence that happened, these would be natural effects based on what Dr. Agnew presented earlier, a intense gravitational pull that would affect, say, our solar system and Earth.
Well, we're in an electric universe, too. Everything is interactive.
Yes, there are interaction between the universes and between dimensions, but and we get, you know, very, very small quantum effects between these. But we do understand that about 94 to 96% of our universe is considered dark matter or dark energy.
Mm-hmm.
It does have, you know, 94 to 96% of the mass in our universe. We don't understand it. We can't measure it. But we can see the effects of it. We see the perturbation of this matter and its effect in our universe.
Mm-hmm.
There may be bodies in motion that will pass close to this Earth, which could cause this kind of a tectonic cataclysm.
Mm-hmm. course, we could all call that names. It has many names.
Yeah, and the main thing is, and the reason why, you know, this program exists is I think most of us, I know the caller and I know Brent, we'd like to survive and we'd like to help others survive. And not just as hunter-gatherers, but maybe survive as a society. There will be those of us that that want to do that, and that's why we're here.
Since I was a little girl, I knew that once we reached the new millennium, that things were, it was going to be a pretty bumpy ride. And I've known this since I was a little girl, and I have preached it to everybody who would listen to me. And, of course, most of them have blown me off as a woo-woo. They don't so much anymore, including my family. They kind of stand up and pay attention to what I have to say to them now.
Well, I think you're in a good place in Tennessee. I love
I'm in the mountains. I just moved up here 9 months ago. I have prayed and asked, you know, my guardian angels and stuff and my guides to direct me to where I need to be.
Because
the city wasn't it, and I knew that. Because I can't help anybody because I came here to help.
Well, I think there's no more beautiful place on the planet than
here. It's gorgeous here.
I
do find this interesting that you say in this remote viewing that what they're picking up is within the next few years. Well, in the next few years, the government is also making the same plan. I'm going to go out here and make a guess that by the time they are pulling families and essential government workers and stuff inland, we will already be pretty much into these earth changes, and the government will no longer. In fact, I'll make a prediction. Within the next year, they're not going to be able to hide these earth changes anymore. They're not going to be able to blow them off on, you know, the talking heads, news medias, and the Weather Channel. This past week, you should have seen the faces on the Weather Channel people. They were just like, what is going on? You know, we had all the hail. They had a tornado up by New York City. I mean, things that have never happened before. And they're all just looking at each other, scratching their heads. You could see the confusion, the anxiety in their faces as they were reporting all these things going on. You know, that it's not something that you just say, oh, that's normal. No. Nothing's normal anymore.
Didn't you tell me, Brent, that there was a tornado in Oklahoma a few months ago that rotated clockwise?
It rotated in the opposite direction it was supposed to in the northern hemisphere.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it rotated clockwise instead of counterclockwise.
Well,
it's unheard of. It's like, as far as meteorology, you know, is concerned, it's not possible in the northern hemisphere. It has to rotate counterclockwise. But it was a clockwise tornado.
Very interesting.
You know, then we had a hurricanes are classified, you know, level 1 through 5 hurricane. Level 5 is 165 mile an hour winds. Theoretically, winds can't be sustained much above that. And there was a category 5 hurricane. They could only classify it as a 5 because there's nothing higher in Australia. Massive hurricane a couple months back. But it had sustained winds of 195 miles an hour. And
I remember reading about that.
They could not possibly imagine how wind could be sustained at that level. So these storms are getting more frequent and more intense. So I do agree there is something going on, and there will come a point in time when there are going to be so many intense anomalies so often that the weather people will not know what to say.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Well, we have about 3 minutes. Caller, do you have a final point?
Just that I think that everyone should really start preparing for unexpected things, not to incite panic, but just simply I think vigilance is something now. And foremost of all, I think we need to be right spiritually. You can do all the physical preparation that you want, but being prepared spiritually for what is to come is, I think, the most important thing.
Well, I certainly concur, and I appreciate your thoughts and your call.
Thank you very much, dear.
It's one of my favorite places on the planet. Thanks for calling.
I couldn't agree with her more as well.
Yeah, I agree with that. I lived for a while in Morristown, Tennessee, which is at the foothills of the Smokies. I could see them from my back deck. Certainly I'm not going to call it a cloister, but the weather is so beautiful there. The springs are just phenomenal, and it's not too hot and not too cold, and the land seems to spontaneously generate life. You have to beat it back with a stick in order to have a backyard, unlike Las Vegas.
Well, I can tell you this is quite temporary. This is one of those cities that probably will not exist after this event.
Well, you know, Las Vegas exists at the mercy of Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
If it wasn't for the water that they send down the river to Las Vegas, I doubt there would be a single green thing in that city.
No, the entire city is artificial. If you visit here, you see the palm trees lining certain roads. You see bushes, green bushes and grass. But what people don't see is that every single bush, every no matter how small, has a small water tube feeding it water, you know, generated by a computer. You know, this entire city is artificial. If we were to lose the electricity in 30 days, this entire city would be fried to a crisp. So
yeah,
we are under the
without
mercy
air conditioning,
of the electricity.
Humans couldn't exist there very long.
And we don't have enough gas in our cars without pumping electricity or water to get to the nearest town. So
yeah.
A population of 1.5 million people are in serious jeopardy should an event come which shuts down all electricity for a matter of months.
All the money in the world can't turn sand into water, can it?
Yep.
Well, this has been a phenomenal show. I hesitate to call them shows. I like to call them programs because that's what they are. We really talk about serious things here. We don't get off into the mundane. We try to approach things scientifically, analytically. Of course, we always have a good sense of humor, and we love for people to call in. And by the way, I answer every single email, so if you'll go to the website, x2-radio.com, if you email me, I promise, within a day or two, I will email you back. And I've had lots and lots of emails, and I appreciate them. And don't forget to sign up for our newsletter. We are sending those out now. We were sending them out as HTMLs, and a lot of email systems can't convert those, so they were getting them as ugly text. So now we are converting the emails into PDFs so that you can get all of the content along with the photographs. It's very important that you get the pictures with these. Again, my guest tonight has been Brent Miller. He has a couple of websites. One that is vital for people to go to, and that is the Horizon Project. You can click on that banner at our website at x2-radio.com, or you can go to bbsradio.com and go to the X Squared Radio webpage there, and you can click on that banner as well. The other is learnrv.com. This is the premier site on the planet for learning remote viewing, and I can think of no more valuable skill, especially in these times, for at least one member of every household or at least every city block in this country to have. As we say, we will not always have the National Weather Service or the Emergency Broadcasting Service to give you all the vital information that you need. Anyway, even if it was there, you're only going to get it a few minutes before you need it. You need this information long before so that you can prepare, so that you can move, so that you can find your optimum place and your optimum trajectory. Do you have anything to add in our final minute?
Dr. Agnew, I honestly appreciate, and it was an honor to be on your show again, and I could not agree with you more that remote viewing is probably the most important skill that anybody could learn in order to, you know, take care of themselves and their families, and to know what's coming down the horizon, because whether we want it to come or not, it's going to be here. So I, for one, would not want to be an ostrich in the sand and be caught unawares. And I do believe that it's important for everybody to know what's about to happen. So I do encourage people to go and click on the Horizon Banner Project banner, or go to thehorizonproject.com and learn remote viewing at learnrv.com. And I can give a toll-free number for more information to people. That is 866-607-8439. And thank you again, Dr. Agnew. I appreciate being on the show.
My pleasure, and my apologies for interrupting you on your honeymoon.
Oh, not at all. It was a great pleasure. I appreciate it.
All right. Good night.
Good night.
And This is Brooks Agnew with X Squared Radio, and I will play my exit. It has been our pleasure to have you here this evening. Tell a friend about us, because every Sunday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, we try to provide the best 3 hours of talk radio on Earth. If you're not getting all 3 hours where you live, send the call letters of your local radio station, and we'll do the rest. Remember, Earth Explorers, who you are. Everything we do will eventually affect the universe, so try to do it on purpose. Be aware that every life is immensely valuable. Reach out for the good in people and help it to grow a little every day. And before long, you will have saved the planet. This is Brooks Agnew with X Squared Radio saying, peace, Earth Explorers.